The officers out of Elizabeth City, North Carolina, who were involved in the shooting of Andrew Brown will not be charged. It has been ruled that the shooting was justified. So, of course, this is not working out for Black Lives Matter protesters. They're already protesting in the city. It's still light out. So we'll see what ends up happening. I don't want to say there will be riots. So it's just right now protests. But I think, look, there's going to be a weekend. And usually on the weekends is when things get really raucous. So we'll see. But there's a couple other stories that I really want to get into in this context, too. There's one story out of, I think it's Arkansas, where a man just stopped a mass shooting with a rifle. And you're not going to hear a lot about it because it was stopped. And it was stopped because a guy was armed. So, you know, we here are big fans of Second Amendment, so we'll talk about that. And we've got a big story out of Philly, a DA who is backed by Soros. So that's true, right?
Yeah.
Ryan's telling us
yes.
Backed by Soros might actually get crushed. So this is going to be interesting, all of these different issues coming together. And then Obama saying, you know, UFOs are real. So I guess we'll talk about that because, you know, everyone trusts Obama. Mm-hmm. Well, joining us today is writer Ryan James Gerdusky.
Thanks for having me on.
Do you want to give a brief introduction of
yes.
who you are, what you do?
I am a political consultant and writer. I wrote a book called They're Not Listening, How the Elites Created the National Populist Revolution, about national populism. I write about this a lot. I have a Substack newsletter called the National Populist Newsletter. Every week I come out with all the news for national populist candidates, political parties, politicians.
Are you a national populist?
I branded it, so yeah, I guess so. But I do this a newsletter every week, and basically all the news from all around the world with these people, and then I do deep dives into elections and issues and demographics, and then I do an essay. So you subscribe to the newsletter on Substack or get cool. the book, and I do campaigns for my bread and butter. So
wow, yeah. Ian Crossland over here from iancrossland.net. Did you say that that the elites basically created national populism?
Yeah, so like my whole philosophy is like one of the book. So basically, you know, everyone who hated Trump made him. Everyone from like the Bushes to the Clintons, all their policies from immigration to trade to war, they you know, if you look at polling about immigration for 50 years, Americans wanted less immigration, they got more of it. They didn't want to sit there and go into Iraq. They didn't want to sit there and stay in Afghanistan. And they were just, and in, you know, H.W. Bush ran saying, I'm not going to do what Reagan did. I'm going to break down military and not be involved in the world. He was defeated by Clinton, who said the same thing, who was replaced then by Bush, who promised a humble foreign policy. He was replaced by Obama, who promised a peaceful foreign policy. And it was 25 years of Americans voting for the guy who said, I'm not going to be involved in wars anymore. And they got more wars. Issues like that, immigration, the degeneration of the West, opening to China, all those people who sat there and said, no, this is going to be what's going to be mass prosperity, and you're going to love it, you know, middle America, and they got screwed over. And decades before, you know, it happened with Trump, Orbán came to power in Hungary. We had the parties in Denmark, parties in South America, parties in Africa. All these political parties were happening across the entire world, and they were going unnoticed. When Brexit and Trump happened, they're like, wow, this is incredible. Where did this come out from? No, it's been happening everywhere. You just ignored it. And that's how the elites created it, by the way, across the entire globe.
Right on. Well, we'll get into all that stuff.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I'm also in the corner. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. It's going to be fun and funny, and we'll learn a lot.
But before we get started, head over to timcast.com and click the members only button to become a member, and you will get access to the members only area, where we will have an exclusive segment coming up after the show just for all of you special members. We have set this up in the event that we get banned, but more importantly, because we want to grow and expand, produce more content. So, of course, we have a new show. We have the vlog, which is we're only into our fifth episode, but the goal is to eventually get a daily vlog set up. You can find that on the website as well. And then, as you know, we've talked about the Paranormal Podcast. We're going to do a bunch of other shows. We're actually in the process of setting up a sitcom, a whole bunch of really awesome stuff over at timcast.com. So sign up. But don't forget to like, share, subscribe, hit the notification bell. Really copy that URL to this page, post it on your Facebook, your Twitter. It's the most powerful thing you can do to help get the word out and help, you know, just have people learn about what's going on maybe outside of their bubble. And if you're listening on iTunes or Spotify, give us a good review. Let's talk about this first story. And I got to tell you, my friends, boy, am I just over all of this. But I think it's important news, so sometimes the news can be boring. I'm not so sure that this is boring. I think it's going to heat up a lot of people, get them really angry. But I don't know how many times I can hear a story about, you know, cop-involved shooting, Black Lives Matter is angry, demanding reform. Even after Black Lives Matter has actually won on all of these different cases, they just keep going. They don't stop. There's no end in sight. So here's the story from ABC News. They say no charges for deputies in Andrew Brown Jr. shooting. District attorney said the officers were justified in using deadly force, according to the DA. Elizabeth City, North Carolina DA Andrew Womble said at a news conference Tuesday morning that the three deputies who opened fire on Brown, a father of seven, were justified in their use of deadly force because Brown drove his vehicle toward them and allegedly made contact with one deputy twice before officers fired their weapons. Womble said he made his decision based on the results of an investigation by the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation. Quote, Mr. Brown's death, while tragic, was justified because Mr. Brown's actions caused three deputies with the Pawtucket County Sheriff's Office to reasonably believe it was necessary to use deadly force to protect themselves and others. Attorneys for Brown's family released a statement Tuesday afternoon calling Womble's decision an attempt to whitewash this unjustified killing and requested the U.S. Department of Justice intervene immediately. I don't know how much you want to bet that they will intervene immediately.
If he was fleeing from the scene of a crime, right?
And you can clearly see in the video the cop jumping out of the way.
Yeah, because he's
spins out of the way.
He was looking like he was trying to run over the cop.
Yeah,
I don't know if the Department of Justice. I mean, I don't know. You never know with this Department of Justice, but I don't know if they're going to sit there and say this is the case we're going to fall on the blade for. It was like that cop who shot that 14-year-old black girl who was wielding a knife, about to stab another one, sit there and say, no, this is, she was in, I guess, foster care, and her mother was like, she was a perfect child. I'm like, you didn't even have custody of her. I don't know what you're talking about, but she was wielding a knife at the time. When you're in the process of committing a crime and you're stopped in the committing a crime, it's really hard to sit there and justify it. It's not, everything is not George Floyd.
In this case, out of Elizabeth City, we've already got people protesting. At least I'm pretty sure these are photos of protests coming out of Elizabeth City, North Carolina. And I've heard already some of the audio and people are chanting, hands up, don't shoot.
Which is a lie. It's a lie. Like, Brown did not, and he never said that. And it was people like, who's the woman from The View? Sunny Hostin, mm-hmm. who was on CNN, who perpetuated that lie. And it's its own myth right now. Yeah, that's like, it is bizarre how this like is continuing. But
we bring the facts here on Timcast IRL. So I pulled up everyone's favorite source, Wikipedia, which says the United States Department of Justice investigation found the hands up claim was inconsistent with the physical and forensic evidence and the witness testimony surrounding the Brown shooting. They are still chanting, hands up, don't shoot. Hmm. That's why I'm like, I am kind of over this. But what do you do when they're not and they want to throw a brick through your window or burn down your
house? It's a mob mentality, and you can't reason with a mob mentality. You can't sit there. Facts will never, ever perpetuate that, and you just have to sit there. I mean, let them protest, let them chant, whatever, but if they get violent, you just have to completely squash it. You can't allow this to fester.
But here's the other issue, too, because, we talked about this the other day with, gun control. I'm sure we'll get into it again. When a bunch of people believe a bunch of fake BS, and they're believing it because of protests— And I'm not disparaging the protests. I'm just saying there is a spread of misinformation that results in laws which just make everything worse. Notably in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, just north of Minneapolis, basically a part of Minneapolis, they're now going to have unarmed civilian traffic stops.
Oh, it's going to be wonderful.
It's going to be great, right? That's defunding police. So now you got a bunch of untrained rookies running around as if that will make things better. Then it gets worse, and they say, see, look, this proves it. It's like, no, it's like someone, breaking something and then, complaining about it not working when they're the ones who broke it.
But because you sit there, and we have been trained, basically, to decide if you have if you're emotionally disturbed by something, it's really, you're in the right, because you have a lived experience, so therefore it must be true. There's this great guy on Twitter, Greenberg, he's some kind of sociologist.
Zach Goldberg.
Okay, some kind of Jewish name.
He's great.
Yes, fantastic. But he did data on more Black Americans today feel like there's discrimination than did in 1965. And that is and actually even though the number of Black men in prison is down substantially by huge numbers, I think by 30 or 40%, the number and arrests of Black men are actually down. The number of Black men who report being harassed by the cops or being arrested or being targeted is up. So by sitting there and saying, repeating constantly, you are a target. It is like creating some kind of social condition in our country.
I watched this hilarious video where an ATF guy He's serving some kind of warrant. I don't know what he's doing. He goes to this woman's house because she bought a shotgun. And he's a white guy. And he wants to check up on this shotgun purchase. Well, the lady sees a guy in plain clothes banging on her door and screaming, you know, like yelling, "Let me in." So she calls the police and says, "I don't know who this guy is." The cops show up and they tell the guy not to move. Well, this guy's an ATF agent, so he's like, "Yeah, it's fine. I got my," they see the gun and they're like, they pull out their guns. "Don't move. Get on the ground." And they're screaming at him. And this guy resists. He says, "Just let me get my ID. I'm a federal agent, for heaven's sake." And they're like, "Shut up. Stop resisting." The cops are yelling, "Stop resisting." They try putting him in an SUV and he's using his head to stop them from getting in, just like George Floyd did. And I'm like, how amazing is it? This white ATF agent is being treated the same as we've seen many of these other videos where they're claiming it's racist. If you resist the police, you're going to make everything substantially worse. Even if the cops are wrong, and they often are, a cop will stop you, you'll be the wrong person. This guy's an ATF agent. The cops are stopping him. They were wrong. But if that ATF guy immediately put his hands up and they said, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm an ATF agent serving papers. You got your ID?" Yes, sir, I do. "It's in my back pocket. You can go ahead and take it." They'd be like, "All right, you're good." Instead, he starts yelling at him. He reaches for his waist. Ah. Don't cause problems with cops who don't know what's happening. This is a big issue. I just want to make this one more point. Everyone assumes when a cop shows up, he's psychic. He's omniscient, omnipresent. And they're like, "I called the police. The cop's going to show up and just know everything." Cop shows up in the Makai Bryant case. He has no idea who called, no idea what's going on. He just sees people fighting. Somebody pulls a knife back and he goes, "No!" And he tries
just
to save
somebody. Just a girl screaming, "I'm going to bleeping stab you," and while waving a knife, and he's gonna sit there and say, "No, it's a butter knife." It, you know, it wouldn't make that big of a difference. It's, and then, and the ironic thing was, a 13-year-old girl was murdered by a knife attack by another 13-year-old
right,
girl, like
right.
the following day.
Wow. Yeah.
And I just wonder why those parents never spoke up and said, like, "I wish we had an officer," or that girl who survived.
They don't want the cops. And I respect that. I do.
You respect that they don't want the cops to save their daughter who's being stabbed to death. Or the girl who
yes.
survived sitting there and saying, "I'm thankful he showed up."
No. If someone says, "I'm thankful the cop saved my life," I respect that. And if someone says, "We do not want police in our neighborhood," I say, "Okay."
But I'm sure that maybe they didn't, but I doubt if your daughter is dead, you sit there and say, and actually when they do polling, most people do want cops in their neighborhood.
They do, that's true.
So I doubt that.
But if they're not going to defend the police, if they're not going to stand up for them while they're being defunded and stripped and abolished and all that stuff, then I don't think they really
Yeah, but you
want
know,
it.
Here's the problem. It's that minorities vote for the Democratic Party, which is controlled by white liberals who institute their beliefs that they have perpetuated on minorities who don't actually get to govern themselves in many different ways. So that's the sick cycle that's happening in most of these cities.
We got this guy Ben Crump. You know, he's this lawyer who goes to each and every one of these events and tries to pump him up and make him high profile. So I actually just did a hit on Fox News talking about masks and stuff. But while they got me sitting, they have these really cool things. There's these vans.
Mm-hmm.
The van pulls up to the house and you open the door and it's like a studio. So people see me on TV and they think I'm in like a building. I'm in a van,
yeah.
In a parking lot. It's crazy.
That happens to me in New York too. And I always think I'm like, my van's going to get towed while I'm on air and it'll be the most viral thing I ever do. I'll be flying back in my chair as my van's being towed away.
So anyway, but it's their van. It's their van with their camera and their setup. But, at the beginning of the show, they were talking about Ben Crump and how he once represented a family when a 13-year-old, I think it was a young woman was killed because the story was that she was killed by a white man. Then once he found out it was a black man, he just leaves. He's like, "I'm out." "Oh, we don't want to do that." So I bring this up because right now this guy's out. You know, he goes out into North Carolina where this is going down. And he shows these big cards where it's got like a human body. And then he like draws the bullet holes like he did the same thing with Michael Brown. And he's out there pushing this narrative. And I'm kind of losing my train of thought on this one.
About how he's perpetuating these crimes and to advance himself, basically.
Yeah. It's all about making money, showing up. Getting into the moment, claiming something happened, but you don't see this guy showing up in New York City when this black woman walked up to another black woman, put a bullet in her head.
Yeah.
He didn't show up with his card and draw a picture of where the bullet was. He didn't care at all. But here's my point. I made this point before, but just in reference to they don't want cops. Did Black Lives Matter protest for this woman? No.
No.
Did anyone say we should have more police to help protect us? No, not publicly. Are there any high-profile Democrats coming out and saying we must stop this violence? No, because they don't care. And if they don't care, I don't care either. I'm fine with it because I don't live there.
I'm sure the individual families of the neighbor care, but there is a whole entire system to build up these stories that the media jumps on, that then activists jump on, that money gets involved in. But this all changed, like, with the Al Sharpton boomer generation, because what used to happen with ethnic politics in cities, in major cities, like in New York, is that there were constituencies, Irish, Italian, black, whatever, and they would demand certain things for the whole community, money for the St. Paddy's Day parade, money in the, you know, this project or the, whatever the case is, and the whole community would benefit. And then people like Al Sharpton said, no, give me $1 million contract as your spokesperson. I will do better representing the community, but the community itself will not advance. And that has been the model ever since, is that the spokesman does well while the community suffers, as opposed to old school politicians from 60, 70 years ago, where they would throw, you know, $100,000 so the community could have a parade or whatever the case may be, or school or whatnot. Now it's just, let's advance a spokesman and make them enormously wealthy.
And then what happens after this guy leaves?
I'm sure a whole lot of nothing.
Well, they probably leave the neighborhoods destroyed.
Yeah.
Struggling to recover.
Yeah.
And this guy gets millions of dollars.
Remember that girl, that woman in Minneapolis who was like in tears because she had nowhere to buy her daughter's medicine because the only CVS was burned down in like... of course they don't care, but that is so typical of wealthy people with working class people. It is so typical of all types of working class people, but it's especially perpetrated on the poorest who are stuck there.
The right today sounds functionally more left in many ways than leftists do.
I know, it's true.
Because I see leftists and they're like, redistribute wealth. And I'm like, that in no way helps the workers support themselves. Like, it's just.
Did you see that child actor? I forget his name now. He is Schroeder. He was yelling at the guy at Costco for making him wear a mask.
Oh, yeah.
And that is what the left does, though. It's like, hey, let's punch at the people who we have some kind of power over. Because there is like a dynamic thing going on between the billionaires, the wealthy, the companies that sponsor all their events, they make them wealthy. They will never actually target Tim Cook for displacing American workers with the H-1B visa system, but they will always punch the guy that they feel superior towards.
During Occupy Wall Street, they put up a shrine to Steve Jobs.
That is so
now
funny.
When I say they, I'm not saying it was like an org, like everyone came and voted to do it. Activists at Occupy Wall Street created a shrine around a tree for Steve Jobs.
That's perfect. I mean, that is what they
maybe
believe
it was.
In.
Maybe it was the one libertarian or like ANCAP guy who was chilling there, and he's like, "I love this stuff." And he's like reading Atlas Shrugged or something.
Did anyone like tear it down?
No, they had candles, and like people were like, "Yeah." Steve
did he
Jobs
just
cool.
die?
I think he died around that time.
Oh, okay. Well, it still doesn't make any sense, but like, yeah. Yeah, but that's perfect. That's a perfect example because you want to, I mean, but they depend on those organizations. How much money did BLM get from these billionaires who wanted to feel good and they want to sit there and write their, back 1,000 years ago in the Catholic Church, you'd write, you know, your check to sit there and get your sins washed away. They get their white privilege washed away. They do the entire performative art program. A few people got very, very wealthy over it. The system didn't change at all, and we're still going to take an H-1B visa worker over training, you know, a black person from Southside Chicago or Chicago, wherever.
I just love this. I just pulled it up just to be sure. October 5th, 2011 is when Steve Jobs died.
And when was
Occupy was September 17th, 2011.
So he just died.
So,
yeah.
Like, it's October, and I remember seeing the shrine set up, and I'm just like, how amazing. You know, Steve Jobs is one of the most ruthless businessmen this planet has ever seen. Just amazing how callous and nasty he was. The stories of him screaming at people, ripping off ideas, and the people that occupy Wall Street are like, this guy's cool, man. Put up a little thing. I'm like, hey, there you go.
And who had a massive inequality from his workers.
Oh, definitely.
My massive inequality. Listen, if that's what you're sit there and you, cause Apple's the thing to do and it's part of their identity program. And these were a lot of the Occupy Wall Street were wealthy kids from trust fund families who needed an identity.
The ones organizing it were.
Yeah.
I know them
personally. Yeah. And they did not go home to sit there and, you know, have to struggle being a blue collar worker afterwards.
Well, this is the funniest thing about Occupy is that you had a bunch of people sleeping in the park with no voice being told to shut up. And then the people organizing it went home to Brooklyn to their apartments that were paid for by their parents.
Yeah.
And they would steal stuff and when donations would come in, take it and be like, but I need this. It's better that I take it than, you know, other people. And they would hoard stuff. And
really?
Yeah, it was so crooked, the whole thing. I just love the idea that in like 20 years, there'll be all these books from the activists about what really happened.
Well, there'll be university professors by then.
Right. And they'll be like, I was there and I'll tell you what happened. And they will lie. out of their asses about what really went down at Occupy Wall Street. It was crooked. It was so crooked.
But that's what's happened with BLM. The woman has like five homes now.
Right.
I mean, she's got five homes now. She's not housing any, you know, homeless people with mental health problems who are homeless in Washington, D.C.
Well, she is collecting houses so that she can, at some point, distribute them among the
her and Bernie Sanders. I mean, they got like, you know, one day all these houses will be available for people. But
can I just point something out? Like, people need to understand Bernie, he's got what, three houses?
Three.
And this lady's got five?
Yes.
It is insane to think you can maintain. You need staff for this. Like, I wonder if people actually think about
one of Bernie's homes was inherited by his like wife's family, right. But the other one is a vacation home on the water in the river in Vermont, which is just $1 million home. Minimum. Well,
people need to understand this, especially when it pertains to like homelessness and stuff. You can't just have a house sitting empty. You can't. There's got to be upkeep. What happens if this lady's got like five houses, right? What happens if a pipe bursts?
Yeah.
Oh. Does the house just flood out and destroy?
Yeah.
Someone's got to be maintaining it. There's got to be.
Someone mows the grass. Someone probably dusts. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. There's
got to
have
people maintaining the stuff. It costs money to maintain these buildings.
And they're probably also not black or employed. I mean, imagine if she sits there and hired like, you know, a Hispanic illegal alien to sit there and maintain it instead of at least employing a black person to do a job. That would be, the bare minimum you sit there and do.
I don't care so much about the race, but how much you want to bet she is employing undocumented or
illegal workers. Absolutely. And that is the hypocrisy of all these organizations that sit there and do everything they can to displace American labor because it's quote-unquote expensive and get foreign labor as fast as they can, and they're the first ones to sit there and say there's mass inequality. Well, who is creating – quote from the book Cold Mountain, but it's like being in control of the weather and sitting inside the rain and saying it's raining. Mm. Yeah, of course. I can't curse, but yeah, exactly. No joke.
Well, let's talk about the political ramifications because we got this Philly DA race.
Yes, it is.
I've heard about it, but you were saying something crazy.
So it's Larry Krasner is his name. He is the district attorney. He was a former defense attorney and a public defense attorney, and he was a Soros back candidate. He was soft on crime. He did not charge a series of crimes around the BLM riots, including like, you know, breaking into windows, destroying public property, destroying private property. Didn't prosecute anything, and now he's being primaried by a guy named Carlos Vega, who is a prosecutor. He's a career prosecutor. He's Puerto Rican descent. And he is being challenged in the district. And if this happens, it will be the first Soros-backed candidate to lose after being elected. But there's been a huge surge of murder in Philadelphia. Like, it is...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we didn't only get 90s, like, television shows in last year. We got 90s crime rates in last year. And this is definitely one of them. And look, at Philadelphia, I mean, these people, they have to live with it and they have to deal with it. So, I mean...
This is
what's a Democratic primary, by the way. So there's no Republicans involved. It's just Democrats.
This is what's been happening across the country. The cops will arrest one of these extremists who are burning things down or smashing things or punching cops. And then the Soros-backed DAs or these leftist DAs will just be like, there's no crime here. I didn't see anything. And then you get somebody who like didn't wear a mask at a Burger King and they, you know, prison, like banging the gavel.
They
and
start
screaming.
Beating them like, yeah, no, in public. No, but they go after the ones who can't fight. I mean, that's the thing. And they don't want to sit there and they want to pretend that they're, you know, protecting these people. But in the meantime, you're having this lady, you know, who doesn't have a CVS now to get her insulin from or whatever drug she was getting. And that's the problem going on, you know, and you're making life much worse for the people you are promising to protect. So I don't know I was trying to see if the election was happening right now. I think vote tallies are coming in now, but I don't know, you know, it's probably too early, but it'll be interesting to see if Krasner goes down because there's one in LA, there's one in,
Kim Fox.
Kim, yeah.
Wasn't she back
in Chicago? Yeah. Right.
And she let Jussie Smollett go.
Yes. Yes.
Talk about,
because she's a woman of the people. Because if anyone who's really suffering in this life, it's Jussie Smollett.
That was the most insane story I think I've ever heard. And you had, he's at, it's, what was it, like 20 degrees in Chicago?
No, it was like in the single digits. And there's these two white guys waiting outside.
Subway.
It's Subway sandwiches.
He's by the NBC building downtown Chicago, which is like a business area, and there's like very few people.
And by the way, can I say, he is a actor from the show Empire, which no white people watched. Like, I mean, no white people watched the show Empire. I did not hear about, I never heard of him until I saw this.
I loved the joke where they were like, Yes, the two Trump supporters who are familiar with the D-list actor from the show
Empire. Right? Like, yeah, I'm like, there's zero chance. I was like, this isn't real, right?
Why? And it's amazing to me how dumb some of these people are that he couldn't come up with a better story where he could have just said a car drove by and a guy yelled, "This is MAGA country," and threw a bottle at him, you know? And then he called the cops.
He sat in his apartment with the noose around his neck.
It was like
for like a half an hour until they showed up. He just sat there with the noose around his neck. I mean, that doesn't raise a flag. I don't know. I have never had a noose put around my neck, but I bet you if I did, I wouldn't sit there with. Yeah. I don't even like wearing my tie like for one more second than I have to.
You wanted to make sure the cops came in.
Exactly.
The body cams
and, like, yeah, I'm just gonna sit there and
you know what I really loved was that like apparently there was footage of him with the brothers like walking up to the area like the day before or something and like pointing at it or like
this is where we're gonna do it. Exactly. And sitting there and saying, oh, you know, in 8-degree weather these and saying in full seriousness, he believed that everyone would just believe him 100%.
But they did.
No, I mean, no, most people did not believe him.
When you get the Big Bang Theory or whatever, like some show, they all like.
He doesn't have a career nowadays.
Well, that's because he got caught.
Yeah.
But at the time, you had all these photos coming out. You had, remember when, the actor, we'll just call the actor Paige, I'll avoid offending anybody, that the person who played Shadowcat in X-Men. Yes.
Okay. Paige, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'm trying to avoid being offensive to literally anybody, so we'll just say Paige.
Artist formerly known as Ellen Page.
There we go. There yeah. I think that still yeah. might be disrespectful, but...
He was formerly known as Ellen Page.
All right.
Technically correct.
Well, Paige was on what, like, was it, whose show was it? Just, like, really angrily being like, and, like, yelling about what happened. Man, imagine being one of these people right now where they're like, you know, the CDC is just very, you know, droll. You can take off your masks now. And then you're like, no, my identity. Just like a lack of self.
Yeah.
So you have these people who go on TV after the Justice Smollett thing who are just like screaming and like shaking. Just believing the world is this insane place.
Well, if you're not if you're not an interesting person, and most people are not interesting, and no offense to them, but they're not interesting, and you need to wrap yourself in identity, usually, you know, a generation or two ago, you either had kids by your early 30s, or you were married, or you had a career you were building, and that was kind of your whole identity. Maybe you belonged to a civic association of some sort, like, I don't know, some kind of bowling league, whatever the case would be. That was your identity, and it was wrapped in actually doing something. Now, if you're like a 35-year-old person, and you're either, you know, in your mom's basement still because you can't get a job, or you're a single woman and you have 15 degrees, you know, and you can't get a job or whatever, of course you wrap yourself in a bigger identity. It's how you make yourself interesting in some way.
You know, I wonder, it kind of feels like we're all in this pot and it's being shaken up really hard, and like people like us are just sitting in the corner just like, yeah, I get it, yeah, this is annoying. But there are some people where every change is making their heads like they're stressed. Like the blood pressure on these, like, activists.
Well, there is some mentally ill people on this.
Yeah, for
mental
sure.
illness.
Mostly
and
on the left.
On the left. Oh, yeah, the study is done with it. And yeah, Goldberg said
that. Goldberg pulled that up.
Yeah, and there is a lot of mental illness on the left, and it's probably self-induced at some point. I mean, I don't know, but there's probably some.
What I mean is, I feel like you've got the, you know, Fauci, for instance. And he's like, you don't gotta wear masks. No, you don't, it's the, you know, you might protect you from a droplet. And then everyone listens. And then a month later is like, you definitely gotta wear masks. If these people are playing Simon Says with this guy. So I'm sitting back just like, what's the next thing? And it was, who was the guy on Rogan? Was it, Bill Burr?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Where he was like, I just turn on the TV and it says, do I wear a mask or not? I just do what the TV says.
Sounds like Bill Burr, yeah.
Is that Bill Burr?
Okay. Yeah. That sounds like
Bill.
And
yeah.
That's what he said. And I'm like, these people are playing Simon Says with this guy. If you're in whatever bubble, wherever world we're in, I'm sitting here like this, like, oh, is that the rule now? Is that what we're doing? I'm just going to mind my own business. It's flipped and changed too much. I'm chilling. But imagine you are one of these people and they tell you, wear a mask. First they say, don't wear a mask. Then they say, wear a mask. Then they say, oh no, the vaccine will never get done. Oh no, the vaccine's done. Oh, now, even if you get the vaccine, you gotta wear a mask. Oh, for no apparent reason, you cannot take the mask off. These people are like being flipped like pancakes over and over again. Yeah. And they're probably at some point, like their blood pressure must be through the roof, because all they know is, I trust the authorities. I trust the elites. I trust the establishment, but they keep getting Like I'm saying,
I don't know.
It's Simon Says with Fauci.
I don't know how much of it is like, I hate Trump and I want to show how great I am in hating Republicans and conservatives, so I'm going to still wear my mask, and how much of it is I genuinely fear for my health. because there are those people who have genuine like paranoia, fear, and this is all like coming out. And how much of it is like, this isn't part of my identity. I wear a mask. Like David Hogg, who's like, I'm going to wear a mask.
Because I don't want to be a conservative.
Because I don't want to be a conservative. So I'm going to sit there and just, you know, and it's,
I'm just saying,
it's also
not
healthy for you to wear a mask all the time. Like it can't.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
can't.
Filthy. But I'm wondering at what point do these people just drop to their knees and like their eyes go out opposite direction and they go, ah, because you cannot follow no rules. You know what I mean? Like, so the woke left will say women is offensive because it's not inclusive. So you got to say Wimixen, but Wimixen is offensive because it changes women and now it's exclusive. How do you live in a world where there's no rules? If you do not have mental fortitude.
Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.
Your brain is probably going to explode at some point.
Yeah.
You're going to fall down and just scream.
In combat especially, people lose their mind. They panic. They fall down. They can't shoot. They're just laying there. You have to force them down on the ground. I was talking to Forrest about this a little bit yesterday as an Army Ranger for a while. Like, you just push them down on the ground and continue to do your job without them. Don't pay them attention. They're screaming. They're loud. Unfortunately, these people have access to social media and are making a big, loud noise.
It's and they run the law. Institutions, too.
Yeah. Huh. And when laws get made after because of panic, that's disturbing. That's really disturbing.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's when they use it. See, here's my frustration with the right after COVID. COVID was like – the problem with the right is, like, we do things like we complain about public education for 45 years saying it's a horrible institution with lots of fallacies, which it is. It's true. And then they shut down every school in the country, and our go-to knee-jerk reaction is, let's open up the public schools again. The thing we've hated for 45 years. No, let's go right back to that. It's not like, hey, maybe we could, like, you know, give every parent a certain amount of money if they want to homeschool or send their kid to a private school or a religious school, whatever the case is, and we'll massively change our education. This will be the opportunity. This is the crisis we'll use to fundamentally alter education. The left always does that. The right never does that.
Did you see that?
And they're idiots for doing it.
Did you see the tweet from the GOP where they were like, you know, thousands of mothers have chosen to stay home with their kids.
Yes. Oh my God. I was like, what is wrong with you people? I'm like, this is what we always talked about. Like, oh my God, they have a parent at home. How wonderful.
The Overton window has gone so far left. The Republicans are outraged that more women aren't leaving their kids with in daycare and going to work.
Yeah. And you would think that this is the time to sit there and really restructure society. Friendly Ibrowitz, whom I'm a really big fan of, she was like, oh, it's so great that there's no more tourists in New York City because I hate tourists, but also the New York City economy just crashed. And she's like, they're all like, we're going to get back to normal. Normal wasn't great. We could actually make things better. But if you're not a visionary person, and a lot of people on the left, I give them credit, are visionary people. They have a dream of what America is going to look like. It's not the dream I really, you know, subscribe to, but it's their dream. Those on the right, they don't have, you know, a vision. And I say this to politicians all the time when I consult for them. I say, tell me what, if you were going to run whatever you're running for, mayor, Congress, president, whatever it is, if you're going to run whatever you're going to run for a decade, tell me what it looks like. And I don't want to hear the words free market, liberty, or freedom. I don't want to hear any buzzwords. I want you to describe to me where I can close my eyes, I can walk through a town that you want to be mayor of, and I want to see what that town would look like that is drastically different than the world I have now. And if you don't have that vision, you can't explain it to me, who spends my whole life in here. You can't explain it to anybody else.
To be fair, it's true. You know, they probably don't have a vision of what the world should look like. They just have, you know, certain, you know, platitudes.
Tax cuts for Apple.
Yeah. But the creativity or, like, the ideas of the left and their vision, you know, look, they might have a vision, but it's like hovercrafts and unicorns flying through the air. And
oh, it's a crazy vision. Oh,
replicators producing free cheeseburgers, but everyone's fit and healthy.
Yeah, if you put LSD in your oatmeal, that's the visions you get. But that's not like that doesn't mean that you shouldn't have an alternative aside from, oh, we'll just make enough tax cuts that the world will be better. There is something in between. There is a vision of education is really important. A lot of people care about it, and we've complained for a half a century about it, and we shut down every public school in the country, and we thought of no alternatives besides open up every public school in the country back up. That's problematic. That shows you don't have – that means a serious lack of vision and leadership.
I was excited when the schools got shut down. The schools are trash. And I was like, homeschool your kids. These pods things, that sounds great. You know? Where they like you get one parent to like watch the 40 kids or whatever, and then they trade off and stuff.
Yes, that's illegal in some states and some communities. And that should be the number one thing people should campaign on, making sure that – if you have a former math teacher on your block – and she is not allowed to sit there and bring all the kids from the block to sit there and learn math. That's horrible. And that's what the number thing they should have, the governor should have signed executive orders immediately and done that, but they didn't because, you know, people between the ears, they don't have a lot of things going on there.
So I guess that's one of the biggest problems we have in the culture war is you've got people who are opposed to something and people who want something psychotic.
Yeah. And you don't have the alternative to sit there and say, what would benefit America that you could provide and use the government, use the power of government in some positive sense? They do this in other countries on the right. And I get that America has some attachment to the idea of, you know, liberty. But at the end of the day, most people do want some kind of security. They do want some kind of vision from their leaders. And, you know, that's why we slowly lose every institution. They erode everything across the board. And if you don't, I mean, the one thing that we kind of won on is guns, because you mentioned it. I mean, the right has won on guns, but that's because you had a group of people who were singularly focused, who had a vision. The vision was you can buy a gun without a license. And when in 1986, there was only one state in the country that had that law, which was Vermont of all places. And now it's like over 18 states that have that law.
Right. That, you know, this is really crazy. I just learned this today because we've got another story and we'll lead off with this real quick. But, there's a story out of Arkansas about a guy who stops a mass shooting. And I think it's really important to talk about because had this man not have been there, then every outlet would be like, oh no, another tragedy, another mass shooting from a, you know, crazy, you know, far right white. But he killed, I believe, one person, and then a guy grabbed his rifle and stopped him. It's a horrifying event. But I mean, in life, people do crazy things. This can happen. So in looking up the story, and I'll jump to it in a second, I looked up constitutional carry in the U.S., and the funny thing is, the gun rights advocates have been winning.
Winning.
Yeah.
They just got in Texas recently.
They have this map here, and you can see it's going through the years.
Oh.
In 1986.
Vermont. That's it.
I mean, in 1986, you almost couldn't get a gun anywhere. It was May issue across the country, meaning states could be like, screw you, you don't get a concealed carry permit. Now, it's beyond concealed carry. It's straight up. Many states are adopting constitutional carry. So we have here, right, like, I mean, look at this. The blue that you can see on the screen is shall issue, meaning if you apply for a concealed carry, they have to give it to you. It can be kind of prohibitively bureaucratic. You're going to get it. So there's only some areas of the Northeast and California and Maryland that are may issue, meaning you can apply and they can tell you to screw off.
Rude.
But most of the country now, except for New Jersey, Long Island, and Hawaii, those are no issue in practice, they call it, meaning you're not getting a gun.
Yeah.
But in most of the country, you can get a gun. And more importantly, all of this green, it's like constitutional carry.
Yeah.
You can walk in, and now Texas is about to do it. Texas is about to pass constitutional carry. That means you can walk into a gun shop, you do a background check. A lot of, I guess, these Democrat people don't understand. You have to do a background check. Sometimes they tell you come back in a week. Sorry. Sometimes they say you're being researched. It'll take 15, 20 minutes. Sometimes they say they've cleared you. But after your background check is done, you can buy your gun. And then in these constitutional carry states, you can walk out the door with it.
Yeah. Tennessee as well. They're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
They
are now.
It's broad across the country. And that's because they had, I mean, the NRA was part of it, but Gun Owners of America and these organizations and the activists had one vision, and it was, I'm going to be able to buy a gun wherever I want to. And they have been successful. It is, you know, not every vision is this grand scheme, but the right had that on guns, and they don't have it on a large skew of things.
And so I'll tell you one of the visions that I've certainly been having over the past year. This is a story from bearingarms.com. Armed citizen uses rifle to stop attempted mass shooting. Now, for the most part, I told everyone the story already. They say it was an 87-year-old woman. there was a guy who was yelling at people, get out here, come out here. Everyone got out of the building right now. When an older woman went out to, two women went out to console him, they saw that he had a weapon, they fled. He went into the apartments of one of the women and he took her life. At some point, there was a neighbor who grabbed a rifle of his own and fatally shot the killer. The police haven't released many details of the incident. We don't know yet what motivated Arnold to kill his elderly neighbor. It's clear that as a resident, Amber Lane told local media, there could have been many more victims were it not for the quick response by the armed citizen. Here's what happens. The Democrat types, and I say this specifically because leftists, like actual socialists, they love guns. They want guns. They want a revolution, so they advocate for guns. Karl Marx said, keep your guns. So these Democrat establishment types, these elites, are like, no one should have guns but the police. Oh, by the way, defund the police. Sure, whatever. I digress. They want to take away the weapons from the people. Then a criminal will get a gun, commit a mass tragedy, and they'll say, see, this is exactly why we're saying take away your guns. They'll make gun laws more restrictive, which will make the problem continually worse, and keep using the problem they created to justify making the problem worse. So in my vision, people have a right to keep and bear arms. And when unfortunate situations happen, people have a right to defend themselves. That's what I see. A Department of Gun Services, where when you turn 16, you go in, you fill out the paperwork, they bring you to the range, you do a standard shooting test, and then you get your free government-issued AR or handgun. I'm somewhat kidding, but the point is I'm saying I think people should be trained, should understand gun safety from a young age, and should keep and bear arms.
Don't they do that in Switzerland? Like, you have to have a gun in the household
they,
or something
They
like
say that?
That,
and we talked about that yesterday. I'm not sure how true that is.
Okay.
It's like, I think it's an urban legend.
Okay.
That's partially true.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, in Switzerland, I don't think it is required, but it is very commonly accepted that you will be practiced in shooting. Young people do it. They used to have, like, a boys' shooting club. Obviously, now they take girls and everything, but they train them. They teach them to use it as a tool. This is something that I was arguing about. It's like, this is something that you need to respect, but it also needs to be culturally accepted that you're going to have a gun. It shouldn't be weird.
They did that after World War II, right? Or during World War II, so they armed everybody, so if the Nazis ever invaded, everyone had a firearm.
Smart.
I think. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but
and I know people who listen to this show are going to be like, oh, Tim's bringing up the same argument again, but because you maybe have not heard it, my argument is like, you know, people drive cars, and I don't think they're going to hit me with their car. Sometimes people hit people with cars, sometimes on purpose, but I feel totally comfortable with everybody being armed so long as they understand. Actually, I feel much safer with them understanding gun safety and having a weapon.
Well, look how many people actually have guns, and look how relatively few murders there are. And look, I mean, people have cars and relatively, you know, minor accidents there are. But people are on their smartphones, like playing a video game, texting while walking across the street. It is amazing that aren't like thousands of bodies scattered across major streets. But it does happen. Like, people generally are, you know, and there are some people who are off their rocker, like the Vegas shooter or whoever, who like want to commit horrible acts.
Well, we don't know enough about that guy, actually. So,
so whatever. The Columbine kids, whatever the case is, there are people who do want to create terrible situations, and they do exist, but they're always going to exist. I mean, that
people will do crazy things.
Yeah,
the argument from the left is that because there is a small fraction of crazy people, the overwhelming majority, 99.999, shouldn't be allowed to defend themselves. That makes no sense.
Do you know who
worse?
Do you know the lieutenant governor of North Carolina is? Have you heard of this guy? He's Robinson is his last name. I can't remember his first name. He gave a speech. They were trying to do gun control in his local county, and he gave a speech. It went viral. Mark Robinson saying that, you know, your criticisms of people committing crimes always, how do we hurt the law? How do we hurt the people, you know, abiding by the law? He's a big black man, rural place, has a big rural accent, and great man. And he's like, I am the majority, because the majority are law-abiding gun owners. I'm not a minority. And this is the problem, is you say, how do I hurt the majority immediately? Not ever go after the minority.
None of these things, these laws they propose, hurts the criminals.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, we're going to make it worse for people who actually obey the law.
Yeah, and until we end up with like the minority part where you can sit there and go into the future, it's not going to change.
A good point that was brought up by our guest yesterday, Forrest Cooper, was that suppressors, for instance, make firing rifles safer. Those get banned because people have no idea what they're talking about. Or they get restricted under the NFA.
Yeah. And the problem is with the media is, and I used to work at the Washington Examiner, you know, five years ago. And most people, and that was the right-wing media, most people don't own guns in the media, especially like New York media, DC media.
Yeah.
They don't own guns. They never fire them. Wasn't like the Washington Post who had a picture of like a chainsaw attached to a machine gun? Or
I think
what?
It was USA Today.
It was like literally a chainsaw next to like an
chainsaw
AK.
Bayonet.
Yeah, it was a It was the most insane thing ever. Like, clearly a weapon that would never, ever work. It was like out of Star Wars. And this was a serious, like, conversation of possibly deadly weapons that they, you know, people could have.
We got it. Look at this. November 8th, 2017, USA Today issues clarification after depicting rifle with a chainsaw bayonet.
Oh, my God.
I got to say, I love the guy. I can't remember which news outlet he worked for. Maybe it was Washington Post. He said firing an AR-15 gave him a temporary form of PTSD.
Get the hell out of here. Yeah. Get the hell out of here.
What, dude? I always say this. Imagine if the guy
maybe
went
if you're
turkey
a bad
hunting.
Shot, like it would be you'd be humiliated by it, but PTSD is
I as I've, you know, gotten more heavily involved in, you know, gun ownership, experienced firing a 12 gauge and firing an AR with five, you know, in 5.56. And if this guy thinks that the 5.56 was that bad, that's the actual weapon of war, 5.56 NATO, then I couldn't imagine him going small game hunting.
Yeah.
He'd be like, ah, my arm, it hurts, what's happening
around me?
I find
smaller guns, I don't like handguns at all, cause it doesn't feel real. Like, I feel like I'm shooting with a gun when I'm shooting a rifle. When I'm shooting a handgun, I'm like, this feels like a toy. Like, I really don't, this doesn't feel safe. Like, I feel like I would, like, accidentally blow my own head off. But, like, a rifle, you have some kind of command of it. And if he had that, I mean, that's a lot. That's a man who cries after sex. I'm just going to sit there and say it. There's no way he doesn't.
There's like validity to loud explosions and noises causing like long-term stress. They called it shell shock after World War I for people in the trenches. But
yeah, but
I think as a human, you really
that
have
was
a duty
artillery
to,
shell like yeah. coming next
Bro,
to you
for months at a time.
For months at a time,
like, right?
Yeah. We have a duty as humans to learn how to handle large explosions.
I went
off. Like we should just be able to deal with that.
Well.
It sounded like a car bomb went off next to him. It was shooting a gun once.
In a controlled circumstance with an instructor with like safety gear on.
People do demolition, like, for a living across the whole country and never have this problem.
The Mythbusters would blow stuff up every day in the Mojave Desert for fun for a TV show.
When the whole earth rocks, when they're demolishing a giant sky rise and you're like 6 blocks away, that's
Bro, wow. we knocked down a tree. In my backyard when we were in the Philly area, we had to get a tree removed because it was dying and it was like had a fungus or something. And so they were like, what we're going to do is we are going to go up. They climb to the top. They cut chunks of the top off, then measure. And they say, okay, we're going to knock it down straight this way. And it's going to slam into the ground. It was like an earthquake. It was crazy. When that massive tree came down, I did not realize the like shake that you would feel was like, whoa, it was like an explosion. It was crazy. And then we had someone across the street do the same thing. And one day I'm sitting there, it's like, boom, the whole house shakes. I'm like, wow, this guy couldn't handle firing a gun.
Yeah.
And there's a photo of a little girl. I love it. The little girl with the pink, you know, AR.
Yeah.
But, I have been to a bunch of different places around the world with civil unrest and conflict. And I've been in a bunch of riots. And there was one point where I was in New York. I was walking down Broadway in Brooklyn. And a car backfired, and then I immediately got an adrenaline rush. It was like, whoa. Because I was so used to being on the ground in these conflict situations that when the bang went off, it was like, that's when you are like in action mode. And then I was like kind of laughing at myself. I was like, wow, man. It's like, I got to chill out, I guess, because I'm getting
sick. Yeah, but
sick.
Like, I mean, there are people who like live in like Syria during the revolution, and like they undergo horrible things on a daily basis, and they don't sit there and feel the need to write an op-ed about how they were emotionally triggered by every moment of their life. They You know, you move on. It's a shotgun. You shot once.
If you watch videos from these war zones, many of them in more urban areas, you will see people literally just doing their daily business.
Right.
You'll hear gunshots. You'll see a guy like just walking, carrying like a basket on his head or whatever.
Well, that was old New York. New York, I mean, I grew up there my whole life. I'm a 8th generation New Yorker. It makes you tough if you live there your whole life. And you just are unfazed by certain things. There was like a failed bombing there a couple of years ago. And the press ran there. And there are people like, they're like, can you stop? Like, no, I'm on my way to work. What are you talking about? Yeah, it just happened. Like, I'm on my way to work.
Right.
That's what it makes you. And I guess if you're a very fragile person who's been very comfortable your entire life, like the most minimal thing just sits there and shakes you.
I think more than that, he had an agenda to push too, though.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. And I was reading about Switzerland, and far from being a response to World War II, the reason that Germany did not invade Switzerland was because every man has to be in the military. And yes, they do have guns in every single home. They're issued by the government, which is Tim's idea.
They couldn't get
Tim's
them tanks up into the mountain.
There's a town.
The next right-wing president, Tim, is the head of the Department of Gun Ownership.
That's right.
Gun Services.
Services.
There's a town in Georgia that mandates gun ownership.
Kennesaw.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
That's
neat. Mandates.
I want to go there.
That's awesome. This is
wait, do you get to pick your gun out? Or does it say
you have to own one?
But
I don't think they give you one.
Okay, but you don't. They don't sit there and say it has to be this style of gun. You could say any gun.
Oh, I don't know. I got it.
That's interesting. If they say, like, you know, if it's like North Korea, if they have a certain kind of hairstyle, but a certain type of gun. That's what I'm wondering. So
there's
yeah.
like five to choose from.
Yes,
I think at the Department of Gun Services they would have like, you know, two rifles to choose from and like two different handguns.
Yeah,
and then just but you know they're going to be like garbage government issue. You know, yeah. you don't want that.
Yeah, it'd be like Soviet Union free. Stuff from like the 60s. I'm yes. like, yeah,
yeah,
like
government cheese. It's like yeah. you walk in, they're like, we've got a captured AK. You know, modified.
You go to use it, the whole thing falls apart. It's yeah. like exactly
that smart
but
guns
it's free.
With like tracking mechanisms, yeah. and you have to turn in your gun to get a new 2023 smart gun.
Oh,
I like
to listen to your talking.
I think it'll be a great equalizer to give everybody access. That, now. Look, the rich people will have the really great,
of course,
high-tech stuff. But then the people, the regular people, can be able to walk in and, you know, get a handgun.
But
and
you weapon. Know what you were mentioning before?
A box of ammo, too.
We were mm-hmm. talking before about, like, policing and everything like that. And the Defund the Police is coming out of a lot of the woke left, and especially the wealthy left, who live in private gated communities. A big thing about the police that people don't understand is it's not only something about about safety. It's about climbing up the economic ladder. My family, my dad's side, super poor, 11 kids, super Irish Catholic.
Oh, wow.
Every boy became a cop because that's your only avenue to join the middle class. If you cut off that avenue, now in every major city in this country, basically, policemen are majority minority. Most are non-white. This is the avenue to become part of the middle class for people who have no other way of going to college and spending $40,000 a year and doing it. By cutting off the ability to become a cop, because the alternative now is to become a sociologist and, you know, back up $200,000 in debt. By cutting off the ability to be part of the middle class, the alternative for security for these gated communities is going to be private security guards without a pension, probably making maybe $25 an hour, and that's it, with no ability to retire. It actually suppresses people, poor people, even more, both in urban communities by making them less safe, but also cutting off the opportunity to join the middle class. I know that's a totally random thing.
But the riots are the same thing. They destroy residential neighborhoods. They destroy businesses. And the ultra wealthy can buy up cheap property and then sit on it and wait until the property.
Yeah, but if you care, if you're supposed to be a working class people, this is what you're supposed to actually care about, is how does the working class, how does the working poor make it in this country and advance themselves to some, not everyone's going to be a billionaire and not everyone needs to be a billionaire or a millionaire, but some level, some floor of comfortability where, you know, their kids will do better themselves and they'll have some respectability at the end of their life. If that's the end goal, as it should be for any socioeconomic policy, this does the complete opposite. Yes, it destroys property, but it also cuts off the path to middle class.
We were talking just a moment ago about, you know, leftist gun control, and I wanted to pull up this story. This is from Fox News. Parkland activist calls out media for not aiding gun reform efforts under Biden after doing so under Trump. Suddenly, you're just an angry leftist who will never be happy with anything, Cameron Caskey said. I don't think Cameron Caskey is a leftist at all. Leftist.
He's just a theater kid.
He's a theater kid, but he's more like an establishment Democrat. So I don't see him as like a socialist. I don't think he posts this stuff. Maybe he does. Maybe I'm wrong. But there's a big difference between the leftists, like the Antifa types, who are literally like wanting an insurrection and buying a bunch of guns and quoting Marx all day. When Marx said, you know, under no pretext shall arms and ammunition be surrendered. The workers must frustrate this with force if necessary. He's just an establishment guy, right? So these are like the elites. These are the shocked nobility of Capital City going like, egad, the people have guns. Mm. Oh, how could they? He's surprised now that the media has completely abandoned him now that Joe Biden is president and they don't need his vote anymore. It's funny how that happens, isn't it? He said, quote, right now, this very moment is very complicated. It's a very complicated time for gun violence prevention activists. They're not. But anyway, because with Biden in the White House, the media does not want to aid us in demanding stronger gun reforms, because whatever Joe Biden does is suddenly the right thing to do, Caskey said. When Donald Trump was the president calling for an assault weapons ban and saying that the measures that he was putting in place were not nearly enough was a very popular opinion. Now, if you're calling for an assault weapons ban, suddenly just an angry leftist who will never be happy with anything. That was always true. They were using you to try and get Donald Trump out of office. The assault weapon ban would have never done anything, and that's why your ideas don't make sense. But it's no surprise now the media is like, we're out.
Yeah.
They didn't want to help him in the first place.
Well, and now, I mean, and I tweeted this because I think the Washington Post had an op-ed about how Biden's White House is the most blue-collar White House in history, which is, like, completely not true. But I guess if you have a job, you're considered blue-collar. And I said, you know, Clinton got fellatio from one intern. Now the entire press corps is doing it for Biden left and right.
Dude, they love him, or they love what he's representing or Biden? Allowing to happen. Yeah.
Biden is the greatest president of this or any generation. The
you
greatest
just tell
president
a lie
in
enough times, people start to believe it.
Yeah. Could you imagine the people who, you know, don't watch the news anymore who actually believe that? Where you've got a guy who goes on TV and he says true and Anana Shabbat of pressure, and they think this guy is capable of running a country.
And the thing is that he's remarkably radical. Like, I mean, Biden is far more radical than I even thought that he would be. He's very, very far to the left with things that he's doing. And people still consider him a moderate, and it's just bizarre to me. And he's like this fragile old guy that they're like, oh no, he's fine, he's a moderate. No, he's what the things that he's doing. He just got rid of that monument ban. Yes. Like that monument ban. Who was Why? Sitting there saying, oh man, I was going to destroy a monument today, but Trump did that executive order. And he was like, no, I'll be your advocate. You can destroy monuments again. Why? Like, why? Like, why was that the thing that he was like, I got to do this? And maybe it's just spit in the face of Trump. I don't know, but it's bizarre.
I do think you're being a little unfair to Joe Biden. Oh. All right. Yeah. So I want to read you a quote. It's very profound and inspirational. Something okay. that Joe Biden said that's going to make you at least, you got to give him some credit. Joe Biden said, the best way to get something done, if you hold it near and dear to you that you like to be able to, anyway.
Is that a real quote?
Yes.
When was that recent?
I don't know.
That's.
I think you can listen to him say it.
It's really,
I wonder
really
if I can find the video.
I hate it so much.
It's worse than the way I read it. That was
a commencement speech problem.
I was trying to read that as if it were. All right. Let's see if this is it.
Can we play it?
I'm a very, very practical guy.
Yeah. Okay. I can't make it any louder though, huh? Mm-hmm. I don't think, can anybody hear this? I don't think they can hear it.
Oh.
Because it's, I can't make it any louder than it is.
That sucks. That's a press conference.
Let me try and find a better video.
Yeah. His whole thing about, and I don't know. I think that Biden has these grand, like, you know, proposals that are large and trillions of dollars. And that's what you do after you're Lyndon Johnson and you win 46 states. And that's after you win, you're FDR and you win, you know, I guess there was only 48 states at the time, 47 states at the time. So 45 or Reagan after he won 49 or Nixon after 49. This is what he did, where he won by 45,000 votes in three states and a 50-50 Senate and lost seats in the House.
I think it's because he knows he's not going to be there for very long. And do you remember when, I think it was somebody in the press who was talking about how great it is that they can use Biden to make it look like what they're doing is not radical? He's like, everyone thinks he's super nice, but we're being able to get all this stuff done.
Yeah, but isn't it funny how Kamala has far lower approval ratings than he does?
Not surprising.
I mean, it's not surprising at all. She's the Hillary Clinton factor, where she's not a likable person. She's just got that natural, that laugh is rough. But she has that natural thing. And yeah, maybe he's just likable and people will sit there and excuse it, but it is really horrendous. And if we go into next year, I mean, his approval ratings, I think, are at 52, 51, 53% about, and his disapprovals are in the mid 40s, which is very average for, you know, 120-day president. Okay, go ahead, you can play it.
I got it.
You got it. We can tell.
Play it.
No, I don't think it's working. I don't think people on
man, but I can hear it.
No, I don't.
I can hear it too, but yeah,
I don't think it's getting picked up on the
live stream.
Yeah, on the live stream, whatever.
Yeah,
oh well,
sucks.
Too
oh,
bad.
Well.
You can't hear it. But yeah, so the best way to get something done, if you hold near and dear to you that you like to be able to. Anyway,
that's not his like tick that he has where he can't speak. That's not stuttering.
I forgot what he was saying.
That is.
Can I just on whitehouse.gov?
Yeah,
it's actually here transcribed.
Oh my gosh,
it's actually transcribed on whitehouse.gov. Exactly. It is a quote from Joe Biden.
Yeah, and that will never be. I mean, that will never be looked at. All of his, you know, Biden-isms, the way that Trump used to say, like, everything was the greatest, the most wonderful, the best. That was, I mean, mocked ridiculously. Biden's, falling apart.
The issue with Biden is that every journalist does this, including conservative journalists. Joe Biden will say something like, we got a, you know, got a, lumber prices are too high. We got to get lumber prices, you know, down. And then the conservatives will write, Joe Biden said, quote, we got to get lumber prices down.
Yes.
No, he didn't. He said, Trudeau not a shot of pressure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every journalist
speaks
says
like Foghorn Loghorn from like the Looney Tunes cartoon.
Yeah, Foghorn Loghorn. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and everyone sits there and assumes it. No, that's absolutely true. And you know, my grandfather died of Parkinson's and my grandmother's dementia. I'm very used to that. And when he had Parkinson's, he got Lewy B dementia. Mm. I know dementia. I'm not like a doctor or whatever. And I don't think that he has any advanced stages of it. But even if he's the perfectly most healthy person in the world, he is a man of a particular age.
He is, yeah.
And, you know, yeah, there are a handful of men who go into their 80s, you know, the Clint Eastwoods of the world. They can still sit there and work and operate. But Joe Biden is not
he's
that
87,
man.
He's 87, right? 88?
No, he's 79.
79?
79, 80? He's either 79 or 80.
78, I think.
78.
Could have fooled me,
well,
man.
I mean, he's aging.
He's decrepit.
So. Yeah, he's definitely not, he's definitely not spry.
I don't say decrepit about many living humans,
right.
But
that'll be 79 November. Like.
But that's, but yes, but he's only 5 years older than Trump. And look at like the
even in the last 2 years, his exhaustion level is just overtaken.
Well, he stops working at 11, or he can't be around the press after like a certain hours a day.
He doesn't answer questions.
You guys need honestly. To look this up on your phones real quick, because I'm going to show everyone who's watching. There's an article from The Onion. Stress of presidency already ages Biden 10 years.
Yes.
And he looks like a mummy.
He looks that's desiccated.
So yeah, it's just like a rotten corpse, just like 10 years. That's kind of sad.
That's what it feels like. The last 2 years is just, it's just aged him. His voice is so much more tired.
What you need to understand, my friend, is that as you're older and older, it's an exponential decline.
Yeah.
You know,
I guess
like
the
older you get, the faster your decline is. You know, you look at there's I'm not going to name anybody, but there's some people that I used to, you know, look up to who are old and passed on. And it's like you could really see that decline happen, man, faster and faster.
Yeah.
Joe Biden's not one of those people.
Your 60s to your 70s, people in general, most people I've witnessed go to that age range don't decline very much. 70s to 80s is a big slowdown. And 80s to 90s now is where he's approaching. I mean, very few people are Betty White.
It's like the movement is
or
what
William
keeps
Shatner.
You healthy.
Or William
that
Shatner.
Dude's like, I think he's actually like Data from Star Trek.
Yeah. or like Dick Van Dyke. There are a handful. Yeah. Cloris Leachman. There's a handful of people, Mel Brooks, who like in their 90s, stellar, better than I am in my 30s. He is not the president of the United States currently. And also, it's weird when you look at foreign countries, like the president of Austria is my age.
Yes.
And you're like, or like the, like Macron. The chancellor, no, Austria. It's
oh
not,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
but Macron is young too.
Well.
He's
yeah.
in the 30s. The guy in Italy is like 31. Like
oh, yeah.
there are, wow. The rest of the world has like people, like it's, you know, if you see Star Wars, Phantom Menace, and like the princess is like, 13, 14, mm-hmm. and she's like the that's what like the rest of the world looks like compared to our leaders, where you're like, and he's
millennials.
Ancient.
I blame millennials. Well, I blame
millennials for what?
Boomers.
Well, millennials, what are they doing?
They're trying to make it. I think most people.
Yeah,
are.
I guess. But like, how many millennials are actually running for office? You know what they're doing instead?
They are, but they get. They're,
I'll tell you what millennials are doing. They're complaining on the internet. These you know, guys putting up like cameras in their bedrooms and then doing these YouTube shows where they bring people in. All they do is talk. Yeah. Probably wear a beanie 24/7. Not running for office, not leading the charge.
It just won't grow up.
It's hard.
See,
listen,
I could make fun of the other millennials, but I'll make fun of myself.
But the thing is that when you have institutional power, I know so many politicians who they never want to leave. I mean, Joe Biden was in office for 100,000 years. Mm-hmm. He's been in office for something like 25% of the history of the country, and he never wants to leave. There was probably other people in Senate and Delaware, but they were never going to be ousted by – they're never going to oust Joe Biden. They're never going to oust Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell is like a turtle. I mean, he literally is like 300 years old. Dianne Feinstein is in her mid-90s, and she is just there forever. And it's just – there are – sure, there's younger people in California who want to run for office. Ro Khanna could be that position. But,
oh, yeah.
But they never get the opportunity because people just stay forever. Mm-hmm. And I'm not supportive of term limits, so it's I'm not endorsing that. But, I mean, you never want to let that stage go.
Something weird did happen, because I pulled up this thing from Pew about the generational gap in politics. 2018 was interesting. We're seeing a lot more younger people. There's a what was his name? Madison Cawthorn.
Madison Cawthorn.
AOC,
yeah.
Obviously. AOC. You're getting a lot more younger people who are coming in. But there really was a period where millennials And I'm not going to blame Gen Z. They're not quite at that point yet. But millennials are entering their getting close to their 40s.
Yeah, and we only have a handful.
And who's doing anything substantive in politics and culture leading the charge? So as much as I can make fun of myself, like I think what we're doing is important. We're engaging in civics. We're engaging in politics. We're communicating with other millennials and talking about these issues. Obviously, the people who are watching are engaged, but there is a large, large portion of millennials who are just abstaining from political.
Well, I
leadership.
Mean, but look at them. I mean, and I'm not giving excuses to people out, but we did get it rough. We came into age during the 08 right. crisis. We did, and then we got the COVID into our 30s. There was a lot of speed bumps that we hit on the way to adulthood.
And that's why I was going to say maybe I blame boomers a bit.
Boomers definitely deserve a lot of blame for a lot of things. They held onto power for too long. They misguided it. They had these large notions. They didn't have the sense of duty the way that, or they didn't expand the sense of duty that that their parents did in the great
generation.
Weren't
they hippies?
Yeah, they're the hippie generation.
Some of them.
Yeah.
Only a older percentage though.
But could you imagine this generation?
Geriatric boomers, as I'm a geriatric millennial, I've been told.
That's rude.
Yeah.
But could you imagine these you know boomers who are like hippies? Who are partying and, you know, like live free, free love. And then as soon as they got older, they were like, mine, my stuff. Mine.
Yeah. And listen to Dr. Fauci.
Right.
That is literally who they became is everything they hated.
I've heard that the hippie movement really got derailed by the drugs. Like they just did too many. Yeah.
And they just.
As fun as it was, but they people that have looked back were like, if we hadn't done all the drugs, we would have been able to have a political movement for real.
Well, I'm sure. I'm sure that when.
I mean, the boomers
when you
are
go
all
around
politics,
the Pentagon
man.
And try to elevate it with your. Levitate it with your brain eventually.
Is that what they did?
Yeah.
Yes. That was famous. They went around trying to levitate the Pentagon. That's Who was funny. That? Was David Leary,
and
right?
That didn't work?
That didn't. Surprisingly, it wasn't like that ball that keeps levitating. It didn't happen. So, I mean.
Well, hold on. But was it like. Were they doing like light as a feather, stiff as a board? Where you get like 7 million.
I don't think
hippies.
They can hold underneath the Pentagon. But no, this is a famous, you know, no, yeah, I think it was David Leary who was like trying to levitate the Pentagon with their brain. I believe it was David Leary. But yeah, I mean, they
not
did.
Timothy Leary?
Timothy Leary, not David Leary. David Leary was somebody else.
He was like one of the pioneers of LSD.
Yeah. Timothy Leary. I think he tried to levitate the Pentagon.
Yeah, we got it from Smithsonian Mag.
Oh,
yeah.
50
gosh.
Years ago, a ragtag group of acid dropping activists tried to levitate the Pentagon.
Yes.
Imagine what you must have done wrong. To create a generation where people all show up like, let's levitate the building, man. Wow. And they're like, nothing's happening, dude. Did you do more acid? Let me try.
Yeah. And you know, one guy was like, wow, it worked. Like, I mean, one guy was like, that totally worked.
It was levitating.
Totally like, worth
I saw
it.
Two dudes, but we I'm not were... gonna tell anyone.
And we were levitating with it. Yes, but I mean, and that's the generation that sat there and hung on to institutional power and wealth, and they have way too much of it, and they... And in a lot of ways, they sold out a lot of things that gave them that ability to amass that wealth because it made them wealthier. I mean, like things like normalizing trade relations with China and, you know, stopping a lot of other things as well. But yeah, that's the boom. The boomers deserve a lot of, and there's a great book by my co-podcast. I have a podcast with American Conservative Magazine called Right Now. My co-podcast host, Helen Andrews, wrote a book called Boomers. It's a great book.
Cool.
It talks about.
I'm going to go ahead and say, we can keep reducing the problem, you know, trying to figure out where it's rooted. You can say, well, the boomers, who had the boomers? The greatest generation?
Yeah, the silent generation.
Silent generation?
Silent.
No, silent was Gen Xers.
No, silent is like 1916. No, it's silent, boomers,
But the greatest generation was they came back from World War II and they had a bunch of babies.
That generation
was the boomers.
Yes.
So what did the greatest generation do wrong? That created a bunch
They made the suburbs, and that's where everything went wrong.
Really
when you American
so?
Dream.
No, I just think that you know, if you grew up in the Depression and you grew up in and you went to World War II, which was a lot of that generation growing up through really hard times, worse than millennials had it. You kind of want normalcy, and you probably are a little quieter in your beliefs, and that you don't sit there and overstimulate. Telling, you know, a lot of things. And also not all boomers. A lot of boomers went to Vietnam and they fought in a horrible war that they shouldn't have been a part of. And like some boomers did sacrifice a lot, but the overall like me focus on me going to the suburbs. I need to have a bigger plot of land. I need to have, you know, I think that definitely affected a lot of people's psyche as a part of like, this is about me.
Yeah.
Cause those boomers later on went on to go, cause if they were born in the 40s, they came of age voting for the, you know, the me generation with Reagan. Their kids absorbed it big time, which were the Xers, who was probably our better generation we have alive today as the Xers. And I say that as a millennial, but
yes,
yeah, the Xers, because they were the most ignored. The Xers never got attention for anything.
They were punk, man.
I think the greatest generation came back from all this hardship overseas, and they were like, I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that my kids have everything they want. I want them to live the American dream. I will raise them that way. I want them to go to college. You know, I don't want them. That might have
been. But they also inherited they also inherited the greatest generation, everything they built. But also, if you grow up in depression and war and really terrible situations, you want normalcy for your kids. Of course. Like, that is your natural instinct.
They built it on the back of war spoils, basically. The U.S. was the only country that didn't get leveled during World War II. Our soil didn't get invaded. So we had massive wealth. And they created a system on top of that that could only subsist with that level of wealth.
But if you look at the drop-off, it does decrease starting in the 70s. But when they normalize trade relations with China and when they go into NAFTA, you see it plummet and it catapult.
Nixon took us off the gold standard purely for that reason.
No, Nixon took us off the gold standard because he couldn't afford LBJ's spending deals. And he couldn't also pay for that anymore. Mm-hmm. He couldn't repeal it, and he needed to get off the gold standard. I mean, I don't think that was a great choice, but I don't blame Nixon for that because he couldn't get rid of the Great Society. And LBJ's one of the worst presidents of all time.
Millennials aren't leading. And I don't know if it's an excuse to say, well, we had two major economic crises. I mean, people have their hardship. The boomers also had Vietnam, didn't they?
Yeah, they had Vietnam, but they also had a massive amount of stability. And I think that, if you look at the inequality between generations, it's huge right now. Boomers hold huge sums of wealth, and it's not even close to where millennials will ever be.
This is crazy. I saw a post.
Only 40% of millennials have not had their first child yet, and they're going to the 40s.
And there was some data from a few years ago that said people who are 29 have a negative net worth of about $1,000, and only at 30 do they go positive. But I saw a meme. I don't know if this is true. It was just a meme. And they said Mark Zuckerberg accounts for 2% of all millennial wealth.
Oh, my God.
That would not surprise. I mean, that would be a shocking number, but it wouldn't surprise me at the end of the day.
2%. That's a lot. I mean, it sounds small, but consider how many millennials there are.
One guy
is 2%.
Well, and add that to all the people who came out of the tech boom who like created, like, I don't know how much Tom from MySpace is worth, but like all those
500.
Million? Still, if you add all those people together who made something and became a billionaire or 100 million or whatever and accumulate them together, I'm sure they make up like a dozen people probably make up a significant
like half.
Yeah, I mean that is genuinely a wild
number. I can look at the older generation and blame them for not instilling proper values in millennials. But when you get people who think the path towards making money is accruing hundreds of thousands of dollars in school debt.
But you're sold on that from a kid. You're sold. You're going to go to college.
And but at a certain point, there's got to be responsibility for the individuals. So that's why I look at this like our society sold a lie to millennials and screwed them over. So I'm in favor of some kind of debt relief that isn't just paying off everyone's debt. So I think maybe like terminating interest rates, pay down the principal, no more interest rates accrue. You can still defer. Because how do you have a generation? How do you have a country when an entire generation owns nothing except for like Mark Zuckerberg and they're saddled with a debt that just keeps going up?
Well, more importantly, colleges should have to co-sign their loans.
Yeah.
Colleges should not. One, we should seize the endowments.
Yes.
There's no
Woo!
Question.
Thank you.
Harvard has $120 billion by themselves tax-free mm-hmm. that they do nothing besides, you know, institute the worst ideas in the society. But colleges should have to co-sign your loan. If they're going to make you pay $200,000 for, you know, a degree in basket weaving, they should co-sign that. They should not sit there and say, oh, you know, yeah, best of luck to you on your path of, becoming a brand who sells baskets. I don't know anything, but they should have to co-sign your loan. Because if they did, they would not give out the nonsense degree they do. They would not have the cost be as high as they do, and they would reform something. I mean, colleges get away with a lot, and also they're so hypocritical because it's like the home of the biggest leftists, the biggest bleeding heart progressives, and every way the college administration works is like the most money grabbing kind of organization in the entire world. It is like it is like a Wolf of Wall Street would not be as deceptive as college institutions mm-hmm. are. And I say this as a college dropout. So, I mean, I'm not someone, I didn't spend a lot of time in academia, but you see the way it works. It is, they preach one thing and they operate a completely different way.
Scam factory.
It is a total scam factory.
It would be great to see colleges have an incentive to get jobs for the students.
That was the best thing that happened because of COVID was some people dropped out of college and they were like, yep. I'm not going to go for a year and figure something out. I mean, I really hope some people figure something out besides going to college. I also didn't go, and I know I'm a unique how I make money, whatever, but there has to be a path for people outside going to university. I mean, there has to be.
Maybe we needed some kind of, you know, like great restart or reset of the system.
But that's
some sort of reset. Yeah. A great one.
Oh, is this like
great one?
Yeah. It took me a second. Yeah. No, but this is where I talked to a congressman from the Midwest the other day about this. You know, they always talk about repatriating stuff from China now and bringing back our healthcare and our military stuff and our production value, actually building factories, whatever. If you left that up to market forces alone, they would go to Arizona, Texas, California for the shipping and the newest and best rail and all the rest, roads, everything, internet, real infrastructure, not like the BS infrastructure that Biden was selling us on, like, you know, child care. If you really want to revive the places who've been devastated for after 30, 40, 50 years of bad trade agreements and Chinese manipulation, all the rest of it, you need government power to sit there and say, okay, not only is this aspirin factory going to come back to the United States, it's going to go to Detroit. And we're going to figure out a way to make it incentivized for you to go to Detroit. It could be a tax thing. It could be what do you need? You need better Wi-Fi. You need whatever you need. What do you need? We're going to make you go to Akron, Ohio, or go to Altoona, Pennsylvania, or go to Erie, Pennsylvania. These places that have been just there, they are on the precipice of annihilation as a people go, you know, and that has a whole psyche with where you have, you know, in America, in our lifetime, the life expectancy was declining in broad sections of the country. And this is in my book. If you are born, they're not listening, Helly Leeds created the National Populist Revolution. But if you are born in Kentucky or West Virginia as a white person, or in the Mississippi Delta as a black person, or in the Native American reservations as a Native American person in South Dakota, you're going to die 20 years before someone is born in the suburbs of Denver, Colorado. That is just the huge discrepancy of life expectancy. South Dakota has parts of South Dakota have the lowest life expectancy in the Western Hemisphere.
I hear you, and I understand that we probably do have the resources to solve a lot of these problems, but who's going to blow up the kids overseas if we take the money away from international excursions and, you know.
But no, but it's not even I'm bored with you there 110%, but you, and I mean, the army is a jobs program in many aspects of it. But at the same time, if you're going to sit there and if COVID was going to sit there and devastate our economy and we're going to rebrand it and not every job is going to be an Amazon job, and you want to actually improve the lives of working class people who have been from urban areas to rural to ex-urban who have been devastated by our modern economy and by the modern system, you need government involvement. You can't leave it up to the free market alone. And that's what the right is completely missing in this entire moment. Yeah. I know that we're on a totally different
Well, you see
tangent.
That with the tech, the mismanagement of the tech, you know.
Oh, they don't even know what tech is. I mean, literally.
It's a private company, so it can do whatever
it can do whatever it wants. Yeah, you know, absolutely. It's like seeing like a guy screw your wife and saying, oh no, it's free will. She wanted to do it too. Like it's,
they're saying that.
Yes,
though.
Exactly. Like, yeah, you know, it's free will. So you shouldn't be upset because it's what she wanted. It is literally nuts what they're sitting there and doing. And they're condoning losing because it's very profitable in the government sector to lose. It's very profitable. You sell a lot more books as the minority party and do a lot more speaking gigs than you do.
Well, how come you don't support, term limits?
We have them in New York, and they don't really work. Chiefs of staff run for the last position for the person passing you, and then they become inherently the chief of staff. It doesn't actually create massive change in bureaucracy.
Oh, so you see people in the administration take the old role?
Yeah, it happens all the time. Like, it's just cycling the same nonsense. You don't really see, like, I mean, we do have some things in New York. We have campaign finance laws where we do matching funds, or you do have some people run for office. It's mishandled to an extent, but they do try to do a good job, so.
I do have one idea that I think, you know, I know a lot of people talk about term limits and we go back and forth on whether to work or not. We could just hear me out. Take a giant spaceship like the one that Elon Musk has created, put all of the politicians on it,
yes,
and send it to Mars.
Yes.
and then just go about our business.
I was on a bachelor party trip, and this one guy was
Rand Paul can stay though,
and he was a big stoner. He was like, "Guys, if we just stop paying taxes, we won't have a government anymore." We went to go play paintball, and he was shot the first 10 seconds of every game. He goes, "Bro, that happens. I'm KO. Like, don't even bother calling me anymore." Yeah, I don't know. It's a very hard thing to sit there and do, but there are very practical things the government could be. I was on my way here, and we're on a road with stretches of acres of land on both sides of us, and there's traffic, and it's two lanes. I'm like,
right.
This is one thing. If there's the government could build an extra lane, like, I'd be okay with it. No one would sit there and protest. One extra lane. I don't. There's plenty of land. I get if you're like, there's no place to build, but there is.
Or tunnels. I mean, you want to build, create a jobs program, United States, tunnels.
Or just multi-layer roads, like, you know, Chicago's got upper and lower Wacker.
Something. I shouldn't be able to sit.
That's cool, by the way.
I shouldn't just sit in mass amounts of traffic. No. This is the problem, is that people would be okay with the government's nonsense if they did the bare minimum, the quality of life thing. If I wasn't in the nation's capital walking my dog on a block with 9 homeless people who are talking to themselves, if we could just solve the basics, people excuse a lot of nonsense.
I really do feel like our government at this point is like, you know, it started out with someone creating, you know, Christmas lights, and they're rolling them up real perfectly. And then each time they hand off the roll of Christmas lights, they get a little more tangled. And mm-hmm. now this is like where we're at. It's like, you know, 5, 6 generations, 7 generations. And we're just holding this big bundled thing, and we're like, we don't even know what connects to what or like where that goes. And everyone's arguing about how to untangle it, but no one can figure out what's going on.
It gets to a point where once you receive a tangled ball, you just assume that it's tangled by nature. You don't even try and untangle
it. And it's also...
Right.
And
this is the way it's always been.
And it's also the people who want to untangle it the most are like, well, what does procedure say? And what should we do? What's in the Constitution? What we can do? Not what power can we just sit there and use boldly to sit there and no, we have to ask bureaucracy to lower themselves.
Well,
and that's why local governments are more responsive, because they are smaller, but because it's literally like, what service can you provide immediately? Not like these long, you know, alienated beliefs that no one really.
I think we've just got this jumbled up system of a bunch of crisscrossing weird laws and rules and regulations that are confusing everybody.
But that's what happened, and I wrote this in the book, by the way, and I talk about this constantly in my newsletter, the National Populist Newsletter, is that what happened in all these other countries was finally it was enough, and they voted for these outsized parties that are very radical in their beliefs and how they do it. Now, we have a first past the post system, which is like you have to get the majority in your individual district, so it's a little different. It's a little harder to have that. But we're seeing changes within the two-party structure that are saying it just doesn't work for us. And, yeah, some of those people are the AOCs of the world, and they're, like, you know, nuts. And then some of the people are, you know, real reformers who want to do something, and we may see them coming out who sit there and say to, like, you know, the libertarians of the world, like, oh, great, you know, government can be used for something good.
I don't think AOC is nuts. I think she's more... What's the word for when you want to trick people into stealing from them? You know? Yeah, that's
bribery.
Subservient?
Yeah. Who's who's
deceitful?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was joking. She just contradicts herself and says whatever her audience at the time wants to hear.
And doesn't actually debate it.
Yeah, like when she was like, Trump is running concentration camps. Legal asylees have broken no law. And the guy's like, what's his name? Homan was that guy's name?
Yeah,
and he's
they
broke Section 23-29.
He listed that.
He like just read it out to her. Then when Joe Biden gets elected and they reopen the Homestead facility, she says, immigration facilities with controversial records. What a great leap from concentration camp.
My problem with populism is when you get a backlash to enact or, you know, faulty systems, and then you just get some really popular person that doesn't know what they're doing, like,
that's
in
not
power.
What it means.
Most
of those people you just mentioned were not democratically elected or like legit. I mean, Hitler was but Mao was not democratically elected to sit there in his position. A lot of them aren't. Yes, and there are some very bad side effects. I mean, Chavez was democratically elected. Yeah, there are, but there are also people who are democratically elected, like, you know, Orban in Hungary. People aren't being marched into concentration camps. He's not, I mean, as horrible as people say it is in Hungary, what did he do? He said to women, oh, if you want to stay home and have kids, I'll give you a social security check.
Yes.
And, like, I mean, yes, I,
it worked.
No. And it started, science change. But like, yeah, there are people who do radically terrible things. But it's also like owning a gun. Yeah, some people are nuts and they shouldn't be holding a firearm. And some people are genuine and can actually do something with the power you give them.
Look, you know, we're at this point where you've got the Democratic Party wholly embracing Black Lives Matter and the left wholly embracing Black Lives Matter. And the symbol that they fly on their flags is literally the symbol of communism. It is the red salute.
Yeah.
That is a fact. And they'll tell you, oh, it doesn't mean that. It means something else. I'm like, shut up. If somebody marches around doing the Roman salute, I'll call the guy a Nazi. You're not going to play any stupid games with me. They're holding up the red salute. That's what they do. They put it on their flags. A guy had tattooed on his neck and then went and shot a Trump supporter. We are looking at extremists. They don't care. They're not going to argue with you. This is the problem conservatives have, is they think they're arguing with someone who's interested.
Yeah.
They think they're going and sitting down with a guy who's literally got the red salute tattooed on his neck. And they're like, but hear me out. Here's why I think this policy is wrong. And they're like, I'm interested. I'm actually arguing in good faith.
Have you ever read the Federalist Papers? No, that is exactly, I tell us all the time, conservatives, you're playing a game that they're not following the rules. Yes. Like, you're literally playing chess, and there's like, no, we'll just move any piece we want. Throw the thing over.
I don't see populism functioning in the Democratic Party in that Bernie Sanders, I thought, was for sure going to be nominated and elected in 2016, and then that happened, and then 2020 again. But because of superdelegates, this ridiculous, like, totalitarian decision-making process.
Were you a big Bernie bro?
In the beginning, yeah. You know, when the bird landed on his podium, I was like, oh, Gandhi. Then the Hillary email thing, it was just insanity.
Yeah. Bernie bird.
Yeah, no, it's that's where that came from, that bird? I just didn't know that.
The bird landed on his podium?
Yeah, I remember, but I didn't make... Yes.
Yeah. Like, wow.
That... Like, dude, it's like levitating the Pentagon. You're like, yeah. I'm seeing things right
how
now.
How amazing was it, though? How did you feel, Ian, after Bernie was, you know, fighting the system and the bird landed, and then he got up on the stage and was like, I'm going to now get on my knees and lick the feet of Hillary Clinton.
I cried, but I was so sad I couldn't cry. Mm. It was in my gut.
But that just
I laughed.
So, that just shows, like, there's, so like, no honest leftist left. Like, back in the day, there would have been honest leftists, like, no, screw you. And
the dumb ones are honest. They're just... They don't understand.
They don't have power, though. Yeah, but like the fact that AOC is endorsing Biden, going along with it. I mean, if you're this big revolutionary, you don't do that. Like
this is the big problem. There was this thing posted on Twitter by Shoe on Head about.
I love Shoe on Head.
She posted this thing where it was like the more I scroll, and it was like the guy turning into Stalin or whatever. And it was a GitHub thing where it's like, let me show you in inches the wealth of Jeff Bezos or whatever. And it said, like, in one day, Jeff Bezos made $13 billion. And it's like, no, he didn't. Anyway. And then it's like, here's how much you'd need to home all homeless veterans. And I'm like, money doesn't put homeless veterans in homes. These are children. All right. This is what bothers me is, like, I'm not going to have a debate with someone who's like, there's, like, homeless people. But, like, why don't we just put them in a house? Like, that's so dumb. Like, you could just put them in the house. It's like, do you know why people are homeless?
Mental illness and then drug abuse, number two.
And not only that.
Is working poor as well.
And there's choice. So I worked for a network of homeless shelters. You know what the biggest problem was? You could literally walk up to a guy who was of sound mind and body, who was just poor, and say to him, we have a house. Legit house. We can put you in it. We can get you some clean clothes. He'd be like, no.
Really?
Yep.
Why?
Because they don't want to leave. So it's not every single person. A lot of people just assume homelessness is always this bad position that people have unfortunately found themselves in, not realizing that some people choose to do this.
It's like Shawshank Redemption where they like being in prison.
Yeah.
I suppose, but I wouldn't even feel like being in prison. Some of these people are like, I wake up outside with fresh air. I can walk wherever I want. I can sleep wherever I want. I have nothing to worry about. I can do what I want. And so they end up sleeping and dragging around crap, and they smell bad, and it just creates homeless camps, and they like doing it.
Well, Austin just banned their homeless camps last week.
Like, I'm not saying every single homeless
person does. No,
of
course you're not.
So there was so one of the things you deal with is that people refusing to go to the shelter saying, I won't do it. I don't want to do it, and I'm going to stay here. So then you get Northern California actually saying they'll seize the assets of people who are homeless if they refuse to, like, you know, engage in whatever. You have some people who are mentally unwell.
Yeah.
But think about this. Let's say you just said, you know what? Don't care what you think. Don't care what your abilities are. We're going to take you. We're going to put you in a house. Pipe bursts. Now you've got someone who's mentally unwell sitting in a room rocking back and forth as they're being sprayed with water and the floors are soaking up, and who's there to help them? Who maintains the property? These people are children who don't understand there is a massive economic system at play that makes your houses function. That's why when you get this Black Lives Matter woman who's like, I'm going to buy five houses. It's not just about the five houses. It's about the groundskeeper. It's about the building manager. It's about somebody's got to be managing all the taxes on this. Someone's going to be managing the day-to-day expenses, the mail that's showing up. I'm sure she has a staff that's dealing with this to maintain all of these houses. Yeah. Or, as she said, her family is living in them. It's not just that a house just sits there and is full of money. And so what happens is you get people on Twitter with hundreds of thousands of followers posting something they absolutely do not understand by it's unfortunately, it's midwits.
Well, that's why Zoomers and Millennials get their education from social media. They're almost as bad as Boomers are with the Facebook post, but now on Instagram and Twitter, where it's just like literally a picture that's supposed to explain a large system. And that's why you get a lot of the beliefs on Black Lives Matter. To go back to where we first, a lot of it's like, oh, well, Black people are 13% of the population, but they're, you know, this percentage of the, well, what percentage of crime do they commit? What percentage of the, like, there's a lot more than what you're giving and what you're, but it, your education comes from memes. And that's a problem.
Jeff Bezos makes about $1 million a year in benefits and his salary is $83,000. He has stock. He can't just sell the stock. He has contractual agreements and obligations, and they say, like, when certain price points are reached, he's allowed to sell out a certain amount of his stock. So they say he made $13 billion in one day. No, the value of Amazon as a company went up $13 billion. But there is no circumstance in which Jeff Bezos could say, I'm going to liquidate all of my stock into cash right now for $185 billion. It's not possible. There's no circumstance in which he could probably even pull out $10 billion. It is in weird increments. It's small. It's imaginary. The funniest thing is how people who don't understand economics talk about economics. When they say things like, I remember when Shane Smith of Vice was a billionaire. And I'm like, oh, is he a billionaire? Why? Because he sold a percentage of Vice for, you know, several $300 million. So his hypothetical holdings of that company multiplied by the investment percentage creates a net worth of billions of dollars. Congratulations. That and $5 will get you a cup of coffee at Starbucks. People don't understand what wealth really means. They think that Bezos has all this money he can just throw around. They think Zuckerberg has all this money. They're rich. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
They own, like, you know, Bezos has a mega yacht that costs like $500,000 because he is a billionaire. But when they come to you and they say, like, we should tax $185 billion of Bezos, it's like he doesn't have that. But we should tax it anyway. How would he pay the taxes on that with a wealth tax? If you're charging him 1%, he's got to pay $1.8 billion. He doesn't have that in liquid assets. Then he should sell his stock. He's not legally allowed to. Well, we should force it. We should take it from him. Okay, so you're saying you want to liquidate Amazon and lay off tons of people and shut the company down because you don't like that this guy's rich and then have no money and no resources to help anybody. It makes literally no sense. You want to reform the system? Fine. Do your research. Stop wasting my time because you're not arguing anything. But then you have to deal with the fact that these people, like Bernie Sanders, are in politics and are making policy. And then millennials are just sitting here complaining on the
internet. And they vote. This is a big problem.
Who are the Zoomers?
Zoomers are Generation Z, I think, born after 1997. So they're like in their 20s now.
It's like the kids. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like the kids who are like, they're either incels or they're like, they got no hair.
Is it because they used Zoom a lot?
No, Z. I don't know. Zoomers.
This is really.
Is it a boomers? Zoomers. So yeah. Generation Z.
This is really crazy. Zoomers are incels. Yeah, no joke. I'm not trying to be disparaging.
They don't have sex a lot.
Yeah, there was a story from the Washington Post showing that like more than a third up to like the age of 29 were virgins. So that does include some millennials.
I do know a significant amount of 20-year-old men who are virgins. Like I knew none when I was like a 23-year-old, or I knew like a handful who were trying to get laid but just couldn't. Like $50 in Bangkok couldn't help them. But now I know a significant amount who are just choosing not to have sex.
No, it's not even about choice. It's like...
They have no ambition. They have no ambition.
Right. I went through a celibacy phase, and it was kind of by choice, but kind of
like three weeks long.
Yeah. And it was like 5 years. But it was a lot of like hoping that I would meet someone, and I would spend like swipe right. I hope that this works out, but that's not how you find someone.
No,
you
they're
make
not,
it happen. You seize the moment when you find.
They're
them.
Not trying. Like they're not trying to meet somebody. Like they
but
have
I,
no.
I think they don't know how.
I don't know, but it, like, I'm like, let me help you. One of my friends, I won't say his name, but he, great guy, but he was like, I'll make a dating app. And they're like, name an interesting thing about you. And he wrote, I love virtue. I'm like, are you joking me? No one's going to swipe right. I'm like, you do a great impression of like Apu on The Simpsons. I don't know, something like this.
You know, it's funny. Have you ever watched It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Yes. I love
when
that
he puts on his dating profile, like, He's like, what's your favorite food? He's like, milk steak.
Yes.
But here's the funny thing. In the show, it's like, what? What's milk steak? If you actually made a profile and said you loved milk steak, you'd get women being like, I love It's Always Sunny. Like,
yes.
Something is nonsensical.
Something nonsensical. You have put that, don't put like your actual heart and emotion on like this mm-hmm. leaf. Like, you'll get destroyed in life. It's like Twitter. Like, you know, it's a vultures.
Tinder and all these apps are really, really awful.
I never had a dating app and I wish, like, I didn't, so I never experienced like what that's like. But, and it must be horrible to just try to make like, general conversation, but if you can't make conversation in real life,
right on everybody.
How the hell can you make conversation on just an app? Or no. I don't know. Some people are really good at it, and some people, you know.
Well, I don't know what the exact reason for it, but Washington Post ran the story where they showed that this was a couple of years ago. Men 29 and under were substantially more likely to be virgins, like 33 or more percent. And we talked about this quite a bit. I think it's dating apps because it opens up the dating pool for younger women to older men. That didn't used to exist, right? A 35-year-old guy had very little access to 22-year-old women. He'd have to go and lurk around colleges. It was kind of weird. Now it's just on the app. Boom, there, boom.
You know? You got porn. It could also be porn's a big deal. But it could also be like you have a fear of being accused of being date rape.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's part of
like
it.
And like Zoloft, like different drugs that diminish sex drive.
But porn, there's a huge number of like 20-year-olds who have like dysfunction down there. They can't get it up or whatever. Like,
what?
Yeah, because of porn. Yes, the porn. Oh, yeah. Because a lot of porn. Yeah. Like,
violent porn is just destructive on the psyche, man.
Before we go too deep, let's go to Super Chats.
Yes.
If you haven't already, smash that like button. Get your Super Chats in now. We're going to start reading your questions and comments. And go to TimCast.com. Become a member because we're going to have an exclusive members-only segment. This member-only segment, I already know we're going to talk about. It's going to be crazy. It's going to talk about the craziest religion, conspiracy, aliens all coming together because Obama's talking about aliens. We're going to talk about this. So go to TimCast.com, sign up if you want to see that episode. And again, smash that like button and share the show with your friends. We got Menian Lee says, can you get Brett Weinstein on to discuss the COVID lab leak hypothesis? Mm. I would absolutely love to. It's just really difficult to get people from far away. But Brett, you are always welcome and we will reach out. Starscream says, FYI, Colonial Network is being reported as down again per the Daily Mail. Yes, numerous outlets reported this earlier today that a communications network for the Colonial Pipeline was down. So, whatever. Gas panic, here it comes again. Make 1984 Fiction Again says, it is Tuesday, May 18th, and Massachusetts is still secretly leading number one totalitarian authoritarian regime in the Marxist state of America. As that would be the case. Oh, this is great. Ryan C. made a little mouse chasing a $5 bill and a flower.
How cute.
What a nice little piece of art.
I love it.
Christian Jimgochian says, I nearly jumped up and cheered during my shift today when the DA spat in the face of BLM saying at a press conference that the Andrew Brown killing was justified based on Brown's own actions. That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Kalun Ching says, hi, Tim and crew. Have you heard of the new Stoplon token? Grew 20 times in a mere 2 days. Love your work from Singapore. There are a lot of tokens like Dave Portnoy. I guess did he call SafeMoon a Ponzi scheme or something?
I don't know. I didn't hear
it. Was hilarious because he's like, I don't know. But some dude, this is funny. I saw Hotep Jesus retweeted some guy. I don't know who it was, but he called Dave Portnoy lettuce hands.
Why?
Because, you know, like paper hands. Like
yeah.
Because apparently he sold his crypto or something and he's like keeps losing whenever he like does these bets.
Oh, that's funny.
I think Dave Portnoy's a cool guy, but.
He's a cool guy too.
Yeah. Donnie Jr. says, Telcoin CEO assisted Nebraska with Bill LB649, which is a statewide framework for cryptocurrency and digital asset banks. Passed to final debates today.
Nice.
Cool stuff.
Yeah, we need more.
Crypto's the revolution, man. I think we're at that major turning point.
How do you know bad crypto from good crypto?
You gotta read the white paper.
What's the white paper?
Most of it's bad crypto.
It's like the ethos of the paper.
Yeah.
And what the crypto actually does.
And you gotta look at the company. Look at the people involved.
Because I don't
know. Are
they
legitimate developers?
Like, anything about crypto. I don't know anything about crypto, and I just.
Certain ones are like computer programs called smart contracts, which can facilitate, like, if I send you money and then you need to.
Everyone says Bitcoin's the only good one, or the best.
Ethereum's
pretty
good.
It's the safest.
There's
and everything goes up and down based on Bitcoin in many ways. Ethereum is good. And so I have four right now. I have Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dogecoin, and Cardano.
Oh, you got into Dogecoin?
For fun.
Okay.
I thought it was hilarious.
It doesn't really do anything technically.
Yeah.
Right. But
yeah.
Elon's trying to pump it.
I
think he's scamming people.
Yeah, probably.
In my opinion.
So you really got to read the white papers. And you can see ahead of time, like, this crypto will facilitate transactions between the Ethereum blockchain and the Bitcoin blockchain. And so you'll see it has a value, that it's coded to have a value. Some are just like, we will make 100 million of these tokens.
And then
they don't do anything.
So I could probably just snap my fingers and create what's called a token, which would exist on the Ethereum blockchain. And I could call it something like Beanie Coin, and I could make a million of them and then be like, they're for sale, and probably make money.
Yeah.
Just like that.
One of my female comic friends said, you know, women are never going to like close the gap between men on income because men just make their own money now. Like constantly. So like every time we think we're getting close, like no, they're just going to make their own coin.
So fair. I think, so I'm not giving anyone financial advice. You buy whatever you want. Bitcoin's the obvious. It's the big dog. It's first in, best dressed. Ethereum is the best technology, in my opinion, for now, because software apps are being developed using it.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, Mines.com. So I do have another. I have Mines tokens because I'm on Mines. And then Dogecoin is a joke, and it's funny, and I don't think it's worth – I think it's just like a silly thing. But then Cardano is very similar to Ethereum, made by the one of the founders of Ethereum, split off, started his own company. So I'm looking at what Cardano is saying. To me, it kind of feels like once they get – up to the point where Ethereum's at, it's going to explode in value as well. So it's a good investment.
Okay.
I'm not giving you advice on what to buy, though.
No, I don't know any. I mean, I'm not a technology person. I don't even know how wind happens. So I'm not like I'm way behind the thing. But I just want to get more interested. Mm-hmm. I'm, you know.
Yeah, it's going to help stabilize the economy.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know.
On a state-by-state level.
Yeah. All right. Lauren Holiday says, Tim, this is my first Super Chat. We are Christians. Do you never dialogue with non-Catholics? We would love to talk to you all. God bless you. I mean, I think it's actually funny because most of the religious people we have are Catholic, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know that, but yeah, I guess so. I'm Catholic. Even though I look like a Jew, I am Catholic.
Are you devout Catholic?
What does that mean?
I don't know. Do you study it heavily and like follow?
No, because I'm a cradle Catholic, so I don't have to study. We're just kind of born with it. We have like, you know, like Christians read the Bible. Catholics get a man to give you a book report at the end of every week, and that's what you sit there and live with. And that's that. So we don't. I'm that kind of. No, but I go to church on Sunday. So if that's devout, then that's what I do.
All right. Joseph Allen says, hey, Tim, I just got my To the Moon shirt today. I love it. My girlfriend said the light blue color brings out my eyes. Ooh. LOL. That's right. If you go to timcast.com and go to the store, we have a special shirt. It's To the Moon. It's a Shiba in a suit holding cash with coins exploding. It's like a Dogecoin joke.
Your girlfriend would think you're beautiful.
All right. Comic Nut says, I just had the cops called on me last weekend for a noise complaint, and my neighbors know I'm strapped, and I let them pat me down and everything. The worst that happened was they told me to sober up.
Oh, nice. Wow.
You just keep your hands up. You know, that guy, there's exceptions, right? The guy who was playing Simon Says.
Yeah.
When the cop was like, put your hands up, put your hands down, if you move your hands, and the guy's crying. If that were me, I just lay down there and I just did not move.
Yeah. I would advise never to yell out, don't shoot, don't tase me. Remember the don't tase me, bro?
Don't tase me, bro.
Because when a cop hears, don't tase me, that word, like, don't give double negatives to people in general, especially
don't
police officers.
Bro.
Yeah.
You know the guy's friends with Luke, right?
No, that's awesome.
Yeah, he's like good friends.
What
with
does
Luke,
he do now?
He writes.
Oh,
he's like,
okay.
I think he's like a libertarian writer
or something. DontTaseMeBro.com.
Yeah, yes, hopefully.
Did you just say tase me, bro? Mm-hmm.
Daniel Heron says that Fauci impression is getting damn good. Well, if I actually tried to do impressions, maybe I'd be good at them.
You would. You should.
Dressari says, hey, Tim, how is the hyperinflation in America going to affect the rest of the world from us? There was a tweet I saw out of Nigeria that inflation there is like 20% or something. I don't know if that's true. I just saw some people tweeting about it.
Yikes.
It will absolutely have a massive and worse impact on everybody else. So basically what inflation does for America is it allows us to devalue our debt. This inflation stuff is really good if you're holding massive amounts of debt because you can take your liquid. So right now, let's say you're rich and you got let's say you're not rich. Let's say you got a mortgage. It's like $300,000 mortgage or whatever. You live in a nice suburb. And so you have maybe a few thousand dollars in cash. You can put that into a crypto, which is going to start going up like crazy. And you're going to gain 10%. And then paying the interest on the house, you're going to make more money on your investment than you would. But more importantly, when inflation hits, the value of the dollar goes down. That means the amount you owe in labor goes down as well. So rich people love it. They take their money and they buy other currencies, they buy other assets, they buy gold, silver, you know, cryptos, whatever. And then inflation hits, their debts all devalue, and then they can swap back for even more dollars, pay it all off, and it's super easy. It's one of the tricks to owning more stuff. All right. Dylan Keller says, wanted to push back just a bit on the idea the right doesn't use crises. Who passed the Patriot Act? Just playing devil's advocate. No disrespect. Thanks. Yeah, smash the gorilla, and I am a like button.
Hmm. Yeah, that's true. Yes, they don't.
That was the establishment. That was everyone.
Yeah,
they all were for that.
Everyone passed. Everyone made the Department of Homeland Security. But yes, the right did do that. But they don't. You know, Bush had a 90% approval rating. Could have done anything he wanted to do, and he invaded a country. So, 9/11.
There's a problem with left and right. It's this like military group of like covert military ops, like Bill Kristol, Dick Cheney, that like. Infiltrated the government and whatever party, it doesn't matter what party affiliate they were. Yeah. They're militants.
I'm not a huge fan of Colin Powell, but when Colin Powell walked into the Bush White House the first day, saw everyone around him, said, "These people are bleeping crazies." Like, that was the actual quote. Good it was him. Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. He was right.
It's a show, says Tim. You killed it on Fox tonight. Looking good in that beanie, my friend. Please shout out my show I'm starting on this channel. It's a show. One love. I wish I had more time. Because on Fox, they mentioned, they were like, Tim, you tweeted Fauci lied and people died. And I said, well, that tweet was in reference to Rand Paul calling out the gain-of-function research. And Fauci lied because even PolitiFact says, we did provide funding to the Wuhan Institute for gain-of-function. If I had more time, I would have also said, more specifically, Fauci told people not to wear masks. Then it turns out we needed to wear masks. People died because of that.
He also said, go on cruises.
That's right.
Very important. In March of 2020.
He is directly responsible for people doing wrong things.
Yeah.
And if you want to be the TV doctor who comes out and says, here's what you should do, well, then take responsibility when you tell people what to do. You want to know what the craziest thing I've seen in a long time was? There's a video right now out of Dallas.
I was going to say something inappropriate, but go ahead. Sorry.
Out of Dallas. Two guys in the army and some like medical guy. I don't know who he is. They're like, we're going to go give someone the vaccine. And they walk into a 7-Eleven. And they ask a guy if he wants a vaccine, and they just give it to him. Now, I don't know if they pre-planned this, what they were actually trying to prove with this, but people think, because the video makes it look like they randomly walked into a store and found a random guy to give a vaccine to. And I just thought to myself, how insane is it that they're, at the very least, maybe behind the scenes, off camera, they secretly planned it and looked over his medical records. How insane is it that you could be at 7-Eleven and an army guy walks in and says, how would you like to get medicated right now? And you'd go, awesome. How dangerous is it to walk up and give a medication to someone you don't know their history?
And how dangerous is it to make a movie about a TV documentary about that, making other people think it's okay to do that to people?
And like, even the weirdest thing is, have you seen the COVID card? There's no documentation to say that this is like a medical. There's no doctors like right. The doctor. There's nothing on
it. It's not supposed to.
I know, but that's literally insane because like, how do I know a doc? Like, how do you know who gave it to you? If like, it's bizarre. It's like literally the most blank piece of paper I've ever seen. There's no stamp on it. There's no like actual government issued anything.
They're talking about setting up vaccine sites outside of 7-Elevens at bars when people are drunk. And I'm like, don't you need someone's medical history before you give them a medication? Like,
you can't get a tattoo if you're drunk, but you can get a vaccine.
No, it's not even about that. It's about, there are certain counterindications for medication, period.
Yeah, of course.
So imagine if you walked up to a 7-Eleven, the guy was like, want some Valium? Here's some Prozac. It's nice. Like, no.
And you're
no,
a hot
no,
dog.
No. Yeah. It's like, oh, you wanted the pizza from the counter?
If and you're eating food, hot food at a 7-Eleven, do you really care about your health that much? Mm. I think that's the first question.
That's bad food.
Yeah.
I think it's absolutely insane, but there's this waiver of liability for the companies, so you can't sue them.
You can't sue them, of course.
So
freakish.
If someone came up to me and said, I got these pills, you want to take one? I'd be like, no. I'm not taking your, what are you doing? If someone had a needle and said, do you want to inject it? Absolutely not. I'm going to go to my doctor like every normal person should and talk about my health and they'll go through my chart. They have a record in your computer. Like, you know, someone gets stung by a bee and then they get all allergic and have anaphylactic shock. They can be like, oh, well, you know, we should make sure we don't give you this vaccine because of that reason. Some random guy walks into a 7-Eleven, like, here you go. And the guy's like, awesome.
Or have allergies. Period.
That to me is nuts.
It is nuts.
I mean, I guess thinking about it too, it's the same for a flu shot. You go to Walgreens and they're like, here's your flu shot. It's like, do they know anything about your history?
I've never gotten a flu shot. They don't ask you like a
counter. I've never gotten
one. Oh, okay. So never mind. This is like the wrong audience.
They make you answer a few questions.
Do they?
It's pretty light. Yeah, I had to get them every single year. And they're like, are you allergic to eggs?
Well, at least they ask you like a single question.
Yeah. So they'll follow up with you. Yeah. What are you laughing at, Tim?
Eli M. says, I can't send the link, but if you Google Black Rose Firearms Chainsaw Bayonet, a company went ahead and made one on USA Today's behalf. Great show as always, Tim. Ian Lives Matter. Hi, LM. They made a chainsaw bayonet.
Look it up.
Is it like really small or what? How's that work?
What's the weight distribution?
That's gonna be hard, like carry after a while. Like, that weighs in your forearm.
Yeah, I don't know if that's gonna work.
Yeah.
Jonathan Nefors says, Lieutenant Governor Robinson is our hope here in NC. We're still wondering how we kept Commie Cooper in charge, but elected a rep, lieutenant governor, and senator. Also, sheriffs in California and Lincoln County stated they won't enforce his dumb gun laws.
Robinson actually got more votes than Trump did, and I like him because he grew up super poor, but also was he worked for a factory. The factory got displaced by NAFTA. Like, he is working middle class. It's because he made that pro-gun video, and if you haven't watched it, you should check it out. That pro-gun video that became popular, and he became the nominee, and he's stellar. Hmm.
All right. Dannon S. says, Biden isn't radical. He's a puppet. I predicted this when everyone but Sanders and Warren dropped out and backed him. Absolutely.
Good point. If the puppeteer is radical, does that mean the puppet is? Not really. The puppet's just
a
puppet.
Did you see Freedom Tunes' new video? So you saw the photo of Biden and Jill with Jimmy Carter?
Yeah.
And they look massive?
Yes.
So Freedom Tunes made a comic, made a cartoon where Jimmy Carter and his wife are puppets. And,
that's
and they're
hysterical.
Like, yeah, it's really funny.
Yeah, I've seen that picture actually, yeah. Because they look like they're on their lap, like as like,
right.
Yeah. It's wild.
Amy B says, they say Biden is the most popular president ever because he got 80 million votes. By that metric, he's also the most unpopular because 74 million voted against him. That's true. Hmm. Pablo Mendoza says, I love how you skipped Gen Xers, LOL boomers and millennials, but no Gen X. Well, it's because the silent generation has the Gen X. The boomers have the millennials. There's this jump that happens, you know.
Generation skip.
Yeah. So Generation X, they're basically just like in the cracks.
They complain the least.
They don't.
They need less attention. They made a lot of industries. They're successful. They definitely co-opted millennials successfully.
Something about them drinking a lot of Pepsi in the 90s, I guess.
Listen, they watched Heathers and then they grew up and like they complained and they listened to Nirvana and then they were like, yeah. Okay, we got it out of our system.
They're
good.
Great.
They saw like auto-tune come in the music industry and didn't like it.
Yeah. Man, Gen X, what are they, like late 40s now?
Yeah. They're probably in their 40s, late 40s and 50s, yeah. Yeah, because if millennials are going into their 40s, then they are in their 40s and 50s.
42,
right now.
I think, is the first,
the
youngest Gen
Xer.
Denon S. says, Gen X aren't silent generation, we're a forgotten generation. No, the silent generation is the generation
before boomers.
And they had Gen Xers.
Yeah.
And they had Gen Xers.
They birthed Gen X.
Yeah.
Correct.
We are a forgotten generation outnumbered by boomers and millennials.
Yeah, but you're better.
So. Mexican-American conservative says, have you seen the life cycle of democracy? Look it up, gang, and tell me what you think. Okay, I will. Love Angel says, when I was young, nearly all the jobs were gone, and getting told only way to get a job was to go to university.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. No one to you says, likes don't register unless you press 3 times, wiped after commercials. I'm not the only one experiencing this, mostly conservative content. The salt must flow. So, yeah, there was some weird thing that happened where YouTube announced that there was a glitch with likes or something.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure, but, like, a bar appeared on all the channels being like, we fixed an error having to do with this. And a lot of people were chatting about it. So if you would like to support the show, smash that like button. We appreciate it. Corey Thomas says, I'm really curious to learn why Ryan isn't a proponent of term limits. Great show and great guests as always. P.S. a month and a half into living in AZ, and it's great. Well, I think you...
it just doesn't... I mean, I've seen it in New York, and it doesn't work great a lot of times, and most people get cycled through the establishment, and they just kind of elect their own people. So the same policies, you just have different faces proposing it. I just... Maybe work different other places, but in New York, I haven't seen it work wonders.
Or if you didn't let people from the administration run...
Yeah, like if you couldn't work, you couldn't have worked in the government. I mean, I don't know. And also, by the way, the staffs generally stay the same. Mm-hmm. Like the new person will come in and bring it in the same staff who done everything. I don't see it as very effective.
All right. Boris R. says, I grew up in the Soviet Union in the 80s. We had mandatory training with assembling and shooting AK-47 throughout high school. It's hard to get guns in Russia, but everyone knows how to use one. Just a fun fact. Great show.
That's interesting.
All right, Irish Wrist Watcher says, if you were in the apocalypse and you only had to have one gun, what would it be? Well, I have not used every single gun, but at this point it would be the SIG M400. You see, Crowder just sent me one, and I gotta say, I've got a couple of ARs that shoot 5.56, and I've got, I got a bunch, you know, I got a 50 BMG, we got some 308, we've got some shotguns, and I finally get this weapon that Crowder had sent out. We went to the range, everybody tried it, and we were all extremely impressed. So I got a SIG Tred sight for it, a red dot, and Everybody was just extremely comfortable with it. The muzzle brake was fantastic. And so it's 5.56. You get, you know, a standard round magazine, of course, which is 30. And then you're good in the apocalypse. It's a good versatility, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Maybe some other people would choose something else. I guess if you're talking about guns and you theoretically could pick like any gun from any point, you could choose probably like a selective fire rifle of some sort, I guess.
You take a rifle though, for sure. Not a pistol.
I want the chainsaw bayonet.
Yes.
I mean, that's my
chosen
gun.
It's cool.
For the zombie for apocalypse. Trees. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We gotta make an FPS that has the chainsaw bayonet.
Yeah. Yeah. That's your next t-shirt. There you go. Chainsaw. Don't tread on me. Yes. With a chainsaw bayonet.
I love it.
All right. Jonathan Smith says, the greatest generation, they starved, they fought a war, came home to kids, didn't know how to be parents. Every generation since doesn't know how to raise kids. Asian families do. That's why their kids are successful. Hey, I have Asian parent.
I have
Asian parent. There you go. That explains it. Colin Connett says, love you, Ian. You make the whole podcast.
Ooh, thank you, Colin.
What a bold endorsement.
Yeah, I like that.
We're a team, Colin. Thank you.
Yeah.
Nathan Parrish says, hey, all, U.S. sailor here. I recently got a promotion and had about 11 hours of leadership training. There was very little about leadership, but a lot of talking about diversity and how we should strive for it. Can't give opinion on this because military.
Hmm.
I'm sure everybody thinks it's the stupidest thing ever and it's making everything fall apart. Matthew Mansfield says, comparing greatest to millennial generation from life challenge perspective is intellectually lazy and illustrates panel bias. Check these kids, Ian.
I just said that they didn't go through the same thing that obviously the greatest generation went through much
Ian's
worse.
Gen Xer.
No.
I am. I'm the last year of Gen X.
I did just say, though, they're not the
same
thing.
No, I don't
think
you're the last year.
79?
Millennials.
80, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I guess you're right.
I feel like a millennial, but I guess I always wanted to be Gen X because all my friends, the older friends, I always looked up to them.
They were really cool.
You guys had a Pepsi commercial, right?
Oh, man, Michael Jackson. I used to have Michael Jackson's vest in this.
Remember when the thing exploded over him and, like,
caught his hair on fire?
That was Pepsi, right?
Yeah, that was Pepsi, yeah.
Crazy.
You had a Pepsi commercial.
That's all right. Mr. McDuggenstein says, Congress is not supposed to be an assisted living facility. We need to vote out the career politicians. How about age limits?
Well, I would rather do term limits than age limits personally because if I'm 80 and I want to run for president and I'm healthy, I'm down.
How about if your teeth don't fit, then you shouldn't be able to run for Congress? Like Nancy Pelosi's so old, her teeth don't fit anymore.
I got a better idea. All right. In order to get into any of the chambers, the Senate or the House, there's like a long corridor with water, right, underneath, and there are just logs just placed at random points. And in the water, alligators.
Yes.
So everyone has to be able to just jump across. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how old you are, if you can't do it.
Right.
I feel like Chuck Grassley could do it still at like 88. Yeah. Like, I feel like he would wrestle an alligator just for fun.
Heck yeah.
But like,
he falls in and then, you know, Nancy Pelosi and everyone's standing there scared. And then he climbs out the other side with his clothes all ripped and his blood. And he's like, who's next?
I feel like that'd be Chuck Grassley.
Yes.
At 88 years old.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. YouTube just jumped to the super chats. I love when they do that. Why Not Gordon says, is there any way you can give my GoFundMe a shout-out? My wife is stuck in Florida because of her ex-husband. We are going to court and drowning in legal fees. The title is Help My Wife, and I Move Her to Tennessee. Well, there you go.
Wow.
Sam T says, Bitcoin is going to 30K soon. Altcoins will moon. Love the show. Cheers. Bitcoin may go to 30, sure, but it's also going to be halvening in a couple of years, which means rewards diminish, and then the value is going to skyrocket. But a lot of people made really good points about what's happening right now. For one, you had Elon Musk playing dirty games. You also have tax season. People got to pay taxes. They make a bunch of money. They need money for taxes.
And it's the first year you're taxed on Bitcoin, right?
I don't think it's the first year.
All right, but you are taxed on Bitcoin, right?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
It's just hard for them to track.
You know what I was saying this morning? The only commodity we don't tax in this country right now is data. For these big tech companies, you don't tax data, and it's that what they make their money on.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to punish big tech, you would sit there and tax data.
Yeah, like 90%.
Yeah, what do you mean?
That's like tax,
a 90% rate?
90% tax. Yeah.
I mean, but that's the truth. Or you make your own data. You buy data from people, and you have to
That would be so cool.
They have to sell you your data.
I mean,
That would be like real wealth distribution by companies who don't pay taxes.
That could be written into a smart contract too. Like a token would go to a person when their data was transferred.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just rallying about this today, is that taxing data would be the one way to
Patrick Davis says, everybody help with Ian's treatments. I assume he is getting help. Hopefully.
I am. I'm getting massive amounts of help.
I think that's a compliment. I think they're saying you're doing a good job.
We're building the Fediverse. I don't know what that guy's talking about.
Oh, okay.
I think the people around the world are helping me right now.
The point he's making is that before he was critical of you, and you're doing better now, so he's saying something must be working. Get it?
Yeah. You're right. You're right. I've been meditating.
There you go. Yeah, perfect.
He's trying to lift the Pentagon right now.
Yes. Trying. It's not working, sadly.
Yeah. Chronicles of Riddick said, came to this country with two suitcases from a socialist India where our land was seized by the government. My first flag was issued to me, and today I have a master's in aero engineering.
Woo.
Immigration debate should be about legals. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, legal immigration is far more important than what's going on illegally. I mean, illegally is horrendous right now, especially with Biden just having open borders. But no, the legal immigration argument should be definitely happening.
Learn the language.
We got to help somebody out here. So Connor Acevedo says, I'm 22 and I've never had a girlfriend, and I have literally no idea how to get a girlfriend now. It's such a different scene. Here's what you do. First, I don't know what your situation is. Start walking. I say go to skate parks. I love skate parks. They're a whole lot of fun. There's a lot of people. Start Everybody's moving. Always having a good time and always encouraging each other. Or go to the gym, have a good time. But it's really, really easy. You guys ready for this? You get a dog. You go down to the beach. And then you let the dog off the leash. And he's running over to the... ladies, I am so sorry. Oh, Herman just really loves everybody. Herman.
Dogs are a big thing. But also, listen, don't overthink things. I have a lot of friends in college, especially, who overthought talking to a girl. So they would make like these broad generalizations. I'm like, no, it's really like not that difficult. So I would go take them to the Jersey Shore, and I would walk up and say, this is my buddy so-and-so. He's from Nebraska. He's never seen the ocean before. They thought that was so cool, and they would want to talk to somebody. I mean, it's not always a hit or miss, but like don't overcomplicate things. Make it real simple.
And I just got to say, don't take advice from me. The dog thing's a joke. Don't do it. Because I'm just imagining now like some guy gets like a pit bull.
Gets mauled.
And like, people are running and screaming.
You get like a Maltipoo or like a Jack Russell Terrier, like some kind of cute like little dog, whatever. But like
a lab,
Maltipoo.
I have a Maltipoo. That's why I was thinking about it. So.
Nah, you got to get like a golden doodle.
Golden doodles are like the friendliest dogs. Yeah. They don't care. But like, it's not that hard to talk to a girl. I don't know where you're from, where you live. Maybe there are like not a lot of women your age, but like, it's not that difficult.
I think it's weird. It's a weird concept to even say it's hard to talk to a girl. You look like you should hi.
But no, no.
Hello,
like,
hello, fellow human.
In fact,
say that. Walk up to someone and go, hello, fellow human.
If you're afraid of rejection, you literally, like, just put it out there enough times you will get. It may be 1 out of 100, but you will get a yes if you just throw yourself out there enough.
If you like what you're doing, that translates. That makes you attractive to women. So whatever you like to do, do it. Do it and be confident about it. Even if it's like playing video games or something super nerdy. Like, go with it. Be with it.
Yeah.
Especially if it's turned into some sort of public-facing performance, because then women become obsessed with you.
Get a safari hat and binoculars, and then go to bars and just, you know, walk around.
That would make me laugh.
I'm kidding.
Women are attracted to people who are funny. So if you're funny, being funny is like having big boobs. You get through a lot of life by being funny.
It works.
Yep. Yeah.
But I'm just imagining somebody actually putting on a safari hat and binoculars. Just because they do that doesn't mean they're going to be funny. It might just be like extra weird. It's like, hello, hi.
Oh, no.
What are you doing with those binoculars? Hi, I'm lost.
And have if you get a first date, have like three interesting topics that you would start conversation with.
I got it.
It's so important to be able to start a conversation and hold it.
Yeah, I got it.
And ask them about themselves.
Learn the Thriller dance. And get a little Bluetooth speaker and go downtown somewhere and just by yourself do the Thriller dance. And you know what'll happen? Invariably, a bunch of women will come behind you and start doing the Thriller dance
That's
with
true,
you.
That's true, yeah.
And then you'll
that
all be
That is not it. True. Like, don't endorse this. This is not the, no.
It's a joke.
I'm kidding, but I firmly believe if you were playing Thriller during the dance, people would join you.
Oh, yeah.
And they would do the
do
Thriller
Do you know
dance
the Thriller dance?
No, I know.
No one
I know, like the thing.
Yes,
you know?
No one under 40 knows the Thriller dance unless you are.
Hey, he does.
Reintroduce it. I saw that video.
You're
a lot
over
of time
40
in the
80s, though.
Yeah. Then what do you do? The cha-cha slide or something?
No, don't.
The Macarena. No. We all did that when we were kids.
Yes, it's only five moves, but like, yeah. But like, don't just start randomly dancing. Like, you're gonna get arrested. go and like.
No, you won't. You can dance in the street. Not like not in the street.
In the street. Yeah.
I mean, like in the city, like on the sidewalk, and like an why
would
open you? Area.
Well, who would approach somebody dancing? I mean, if I'm from New York for too long, I would never approach someone just dancing in the
they
street.
Like bro, the dude, I used to play music in Chicago on the street all the time.
Playing music and randomly dancing, especially if there's no music playing.
There were people who would randomly dance. They'd turn on music and they would just do dances, and people would give them money, and then people would come over and like dance with them and hang out.
You got to dance in your mind. Where, like, only a certain part of your body. You're counting the rhythm, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, in your lower left core. And you just pick the part of your body that's doing the beat, 1, 2, 3, 4, and you subtly move it so that people can't really tell you're moving. But because you're moving, you're in that comfort flow. People find that attractive.
I'd be willing to bet. I'll bet you that if you go to, like, if you're in New York and you're playing the Thriller and you're doing the Thriller dance, while that song is playing in one iteration, someone will come up and start dancing.
Yes, because mental illness is rampant in New York. I don't know where this kid lives. He could be living in a cornfield in Omaha. I'm just sitting there and saying, if you know what, go to places where there are people your age. Yes. If you're 22 and you're in college, especially, like, and I guess colleges are closed now, but try your hardest there, because after college, it becomes a lot harder. It just does, like, because you're not around people your age as much. You have to be much more aggressive.
If you're
in college, go for it.
Yeah, when you're done, may I add my 2 cents?
Yes. Go ahead.
I don't know anything about girls. Yeah. But I would say that if you're working toward a common goal, it becomes a lot easier to have something to talk about in the first place. So if you approach someone, for example, in your class, or someone who's working on something with you, that's going to be good too, if you actually want someone who will work with you in life. I think that's a good start.
Yeah.
That's just my really boring. It's not a joke. It's not quite serious. If you're working toward the same goal, it's really good.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Average Guy 3048 says, "Hi, Tim. I'm a Gen Z and I don't want to date any women here in the U.S. because I'm afraid of being accused of something horrible. So yeah, thanks, society."
So I just told you, yeah.
So date guys.
Or girls overseas. That's always kind of thrilled me.
Like immigrants who don't know, illegal aliens, they can't complain. They'll be deported. Like, I mean, like, yeah, that's your option.
No.
I'm just joking. I was a kid. No, I I don't think every girl's like that.
It's kind of crazy because, I wonder if the internet is doing this. You know what the secret technique was when I was growing up?
I don't know.
There wasn't. I just like, hi.
How do I get to know girls?
Yeah.
Well, it makes antisocial people if you own your communications through a screen. I mean, it does make
you know what I used to do? Because I used to do fundraising for nonprofits. And here, I'll let you in a secret for fundraising that these companies don't tell you. Men predominantly fundraise off of women. Women predominantly fundraise off of men.
Oh, yeah.
So in the fundraising office, you have, like, women, and you'd ask them, like, all the names, all dudes. And then for me, it's like all the signups are women. And so you want to know the easiest way for me to actually get it, we call it a stop, like to get someone to stop and talk to you. Just see someone walking on the street, and then I see a person, walk right up, reach out my hand.
Yeah, physical contact.
No, I don't touch them. I reach out my hand. And you know what they do? They shake my hand. And I say, hey, nice to meet you. I'm Tim. What are you doing? You go to school here? You go to Columbia? Oh, cool. Yeah, a bunch of my friends go here. Well, I'm saving the environment. You want to save the environment with me?
Which city did you do this in? Chicago?
I did it in Chicago and California.
Oh, in New York, they'd say, go F yourself. Like,
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Because
I would never shake my hand with some people.
Yeah, you wouldn't. But so I wouldn't waste my time with someone like you. What the best fundraisers do is they identify, the way I described it to people when I was training, I was like, you can start to see the signs in someone. If they have like a furrowed brow, that's a red light. You're not going to stop.
Resting, you know what face? Like
Right. Yeah. You're not going to stop. Then you have like yellow. It's like, we can try. If you don't understand this concept, you're going to be yelling at people who hate you all day. Don't do that. Look for the green light. Look for the people who are walking around with a smile on their face. They're doing something specific. They got headphones in. It's a waste of your time. If they're like purposely avoiding you, don't waste your time. You see someone walking.
Make eye contact, like, yeah.
They make eye contact, but then you just walk up and you shake your hand. Hey, how's it going? What are you doing? And then just have fun. So I just feel like, hey, do you live in Chicago? Like, oh, that's cool. Like, do you go to school here? You don't go to school here? What are you doing out here? What are you walking around downtown for, like some crazy person? Then they'd laugh and I'd be like, no, whatever, man. You know, here, give me your credit card real quick. And they'd be like, what? I'm like, I'm serious. Give me your credit. No, because we're saving the environment. And then they laugh and it's fun. Maybe I'm just, you know, arrogant. So it was really easy for me to tell people what to do.
Your suggestion about touching, physical contact is massively important in
fundraising, but as well as dating. You can only offer it.
Of course. And it should be innocent. And like,
don't touch people.
Just because you want to make a connection, that's the best thing with dating too. When you first meet someone, if you make physical contact, like mutually, it makes it so much easier to interact.
Just here's my advice. The best thing you can do is to like go downtown and then just identify a person you want to meet and just start singing that Meatloaf song. I will do anything for love. And then there's going to immediately be like, here's my phone number.
He has not offered a single good suggestion so far. I just want everyone, for the 22-year-old who's like writing this down, this is where you're
meet
like.
Meatloaf, anything for love. What year was that, 93?
I got to guess, yeah, it's, something like that.
Yeah,
that's all right, a everybody. Great album. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah. What a year, huh? If you haven't already, go to timcast.com, sign up, because we're going to have a crazy and wild bonus segment coming up, which should be up around 11 or so. You can follow this show, facebook.com/TimcastIRL, where we post all these little clips, and you can share them because, you know, we're trying to leverage Facebook to get more people to go to our website. And you can follow us on Instagram for the same reason, at TimcastIRL. And smash the like button, share the show. Do you want to shout anything out? Do you have a book,
They're Not Listening. I lately created the National Populist Revolution, and my National Populist newsletter on Substack. It comes out every week and multiple times a month, and it's deep dives. If you like politics, like national populism, it's definitely the place to be because it's the only place to be. They have it.
And it is confirmed. I'd Do Anything for Love by Meatloaf. It's 1993. Bad Out of Hell 2, Back into Hell was the album.
Very good.
Meatloaf's?
Yeah, good. Meatloaf. Yeah. I love it. And I'm Ian Crossland. You guys can follow me at iancrossland.net. And on social media at Ian Crossland. So thanks a lot. Right, come on.
You guys can follow me on Twitter at Sour Patch Lids to help me overcome the actual Sour Patch Kids in follower count. That's my life goal now. Please help me.
Yeah. Oh, that's an account?
Sour Patch Kids?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I'm at Ryan Grudusky on Twitter.
Yeah.
Twitter, Instagram, all the rest of it. At Ryan.
And you can follow me at TimCast basically everywhere. We will see you over at TimCast.com. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye, guys.